Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Let me make sure that I'm not muted. Am I muted? Am I coming through there, Jan, Terry?
Yeah, you come through fine.
Okay. All right. Anyway, welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 2nd, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you'd like to listen live over our radio, or if you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. Our access code is 449-389-pound. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off on our scripture reading last week. We're in the book of Mark. Gospel of Mark, chapter 3, verses 7 through 21. But Jesus withdrew himself with his disciples to the sea, and a great multitude from Galilee followed him, and from Judea, and from Jerusalem, and Idumea, and from beyond Jordan, and they that of about Tyre and Sidon, a great multitude, when they had heard what great things he did, came unto him. And he spake unto his disciples, that a small ship should wait on him because of the multitude, lest they should throng him. For he had healed many, insomuch that they pressed upon him for to touch him, as many as had plagues, and unclean spirits, when they saw him, fell down before him, and cried, saying, Thou art the Son of God. And he straitly charged them that they should not make to him known. And he goeth up into a mountain, and called unto him whom he would, and they came unto him. And he ordained 12, that they should be with him, and that he might send them forth to preach, and to have power to heal sicknesses, and to cast out devils. And Simon, he surnamed Peter, and James the son of Zebedee, and John the brother of James, and he surnamed them Barnabas, which is the sons of thunder, and Andrew and Philip, and Bartholomew and Matthew and Thomas and James, and the sons of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, and Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot, which also betrayed him. And they went into a house. And the multitude cometh together again, so that they could not so much as eat bread. And when his friends heard of it, they went out to lay hands on him, for they said, He is beside himself. All right, that's the Gospel of Mark, chapter 3, verses 7 through 21. Okay, tonight, we're going to really go pretty quick into the open forum. I don't have anything particular to share. I'm working on a paper, which we just about finished, actually. We're going to file it starting tomorrow. So another paper into the case. And we'll read that paper next week. I think it's 8 pages, so it's not going to be too long. But we'll pick it up then. So let's go over to Jen. Do we have any questions or any announcements?
No, there are no questions for this week. We do have a need for more people to mail. We added mailings to the states, to the House and Senate of each state, so that added 100 more copies to mail out. So I'm short about 125 to finish up the mailings of everybody that we want to address so far. So I would appreciate it if anybody has some time and a small amount of funds, if they can give me a jiggle on my email, Jan at National Liberty Alliance, and maybe we can get those covered. And probably should announce that the new document John's working on, I've read it, and it's great, it needs to go out. It's going to be inexpensive to mail, probably 50 cents to a dollar. It can go in a letter, be 8 pages, as he mentioned, and it's timely. We need to get it out. We'd like to get it out next week if we can. So if you'd like to participate in that mailing, it'll be a simple one, little 8-page letter. Throw it in, take it down, toss it in the box. You'll be all set. So just give me an email at janet@nationallibertyalliance.org, and I'll send you the addresses. We'll go from there. I've got the address pretty well worked out for everything. We're going to repeat the mailing that we've already done with the 59-page document. So it'll be a repeat. I might be able to, if you want, just double up, use the same address as you had before, if you like. So if that works for you, just let me know in the email. And I guess that's about all I have, John. We just need some more help mailing.
Yeah, it's going to be 8 pages and put it into a regular envelope. Jan said, we'll give you the addresses, and then you put the grand jury's address in the top left-hand corner, the return address. It's going to require 2 stamps. So I don't know what stamp. I think stamps, are they over 50? Are they over 49 cents now? Did they hit 50?
They're about 50, but the next one up, if you do the right stamp, it's only, I think, 25 cents more.
Okay, so it's going to be about 75 cents a mailing.
Yeah, right.
So maybe people can print these out for us, as many as we can get, and mail them out. It doesn't have to be certified or anything, but we do want to send them out to everyone. And we're also going to be filing another paper, which we'll probably discuss that next week, too. As a matter of fact, I have a feeling that they're going to be short, both of them. That being the case, we might read both of them next week. We'll see what happens. And I think we probably should, because of some of the things or the events that we see taking place. But in any event, next week we'll get that out and read through it. But again, we're going to need as many volunteers as we can on this again. Do we have enough volunteers to finish off some of the other mailings for the state?
No. The first mailing, we're short about 125 copies. We need 125 more copies mailed out, whatever numbers people can do.
Okay,
we've sent out about 185 copies so far.
Okay, so that requires that's a 58-page document
right.
That goes into the priority envelope that they have down at the post office. It's $7.35 per mailing. So anybody can volunteer for mailing some of those for us with us. Just get a hold of Jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, or you can find his phone number up on our website under the directory. I know Brent was traveling. Is he in with us today?
I haven't looked for him, but I didn't see him yet.
Let's see if we can find him.
You got a shift now with this great panel.
Look, we got to get rid of this platform. I am so confused trying to look here and there, switching here and scrolling, and everything's so spaced out, and I don't know why they did it like this. But we definitely got to find a different platform. All right. Well, anyway, we're going to go right into an open forum then. If Brent isn't with us, I'm looking right now. I don't see him so far.
I don't see him either, John.
Okay. Yeah, I spoke with him during the week, or right before the weekend, actually, and he told me he was traveling at the time. So I presume he'd be gone for the entire holiday. Probably won't be back till. Maybe during the week. Okay, so we don't have many people in the queue, so if anybody has a question or a comment, star 6 and 1, get into the queue. We'll take our first caller. Hopefully I don't end the session or dump everybody out here.
Yeah.
We'll try it.
Hard to say.
I got my fingers crossed. Well, we just lost someone there. I don't know how that happened. So knowing we only have one person in the queue. You got Mike Smith, Stacy.
Yeah, Stacy, yeah. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I've been looking at I've been listening to some of the different recordings, and I appreciate you guys have it have all your archives there, really easy to get to. I had been listening to some of Rod Klass's stuff, ran across his stuff about a month ago, and was listening, and I've heard you guys mention him a couple of times, so I thought that was okay. Sounds like I'm on the right track. And then, so I was looking at just last night the filing that you guys did on August 14th, and
correct.
I had a couple of questions in there. One question I had under the defendants, you have federal judiciary care of U.S. Attorney's Office. Can you explain to me what the connection with the federal judiciary is to the U.S. Attorney's Office?
Well, we didn't. We weren't going to send it to all 94 federal districts, but we actually ended up doing that, and we sent a full copy without the attachment. So we probably should have pulled that part out, but it doesn't matter. Usually, you know, if you want to, for instance, because we're suing the entire judiciary, which is all 94 federal district courts, we just send it to the U.S. attorney in the district that we're filing, and that should suffice for all filings, you know. So that's why we were doing that. But we did end up, and I've forgotten we had put that in that way, but we did end up sending a copy to all 94 federal district courts. We sent a copy, of course, to the appellate. There were 13 appellate courts, United States appellate courts. I think they call, do they call them appellate courts or court of appeals? Do you remember, Jan? I don't remember which.
Some went each way. Usually they were court of appeals.
Okay. And then, of course, we directed our papers directly to the United States Supreme Court, and also to both houses of Congress there. And we set it up as a natural law case. We've opened this case up actually a little over 2 years ago, or about 2 years ago. And we've been filing papers, and they've been really just remaining silent. So we've been acquiescing constantly all the way through. And it's pretty... you know, damning to them when you keep reporting crimes right to the Court of Justice, to the courts, all of these people, including the United States Supreme Court, and they just remain silent. They refuse to obey the law. And but anyway, this last filing was really the finale for us to make a decision of the court. The court has been in session for 2 years. They haven't responded. Again, they just stayed quiet. And that's what that paper represents. So they had opportunity. We still give them opportunity to speak. This next paper, I think, is pretty powerful. I think it's right on point to what it is that, you know, why it is that they're acting the way they're acting, and what they think is going to save them. And there's going to be another paper that we're going to be writing, and I think that's going to be a very short paper. I'm hoping to keep it down to 2 or 3 pages. And if we can do that, then we will read that next week. But even if it's longer than that, I think we might read them both because, again, the timing is perfect and exactly the things are going on, and we're going to tie that together at that point in time. So anyway.
Okay. Well, here's something else, and I'm not sure how many people are in the queue waiting, but I wanted to ask.
Yeah, there's only 2 people, so if anybody else wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1, but go ahead.
Okay. So... part of the reason I called in and was asking about this judiciary, and I listened to everything I could find about the judiciary in the past sessions archive. And the reason I'm interested in it, I have some things that are going on right now, and I'm not sure if I'm a little hesitant to talk about it. But if I'll start in, and if you think maybe we could talk off, it would be better to talk offline a little bit, then that's okay.
All right.
But I'm currently engaged. I've been involved with the – you're familiar with the AO, I'm sure. AO?
AO standing for what?
No, that the Administrative Office of the Courts. So this is the – in Washington, D.C.
Okay, yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but go ahead.
Yeah, so they're the administrative section of the judiciary. So you have the courts themselves spread throughout the country. And then in Washington, in the Thurgood Marshall Building, there is a organization called the AO, congressionally set up. The director there is Mr. Duffy, and he was once in charge of that place and then went did something else and came back recently. And so he's appointed by this chief executive is appointed by the chief justice of the Supreme Court. And so I've been dealing with them and trying to get some information and trying to better understand some of the roles there. And as you talk about the silence, that's all I'm coming up against is the silence. And the reason I reached out to them is that in my state, California.
Well, just to make a point at that junction here, you realize that the silence means something, and we should take advantage
exactly.
of that silence, because United States Supreme Court, when they were reasonably just many years ago, had ruled, and this has probably come up numerous times, and that is when an individual, particularly someone elected or appointed, has a duty to speak, to be silent is fraud then. And so if you have a duty to speak, you have to speak. You can't, for instance, when people go before, that are working in government, and they go before Congress and they plead the fifth, you know, they want to remain silent. Well, they don't have that option, not when they're acting on behalf in a duty for the people. You know, they've taken an oath and they've got a duty to speak. So when they don't speak, it's fraud. But it tells you very, very clearly that they know that they're guilty. And let me tell you something. This is something people have to realize, but you still have to have a strategy and a plan when you go into courts, and you got to be ready. You know, I think maybe experience is the only thing that gives this to you. You know, we can accumulate knowledge, and then we exercise that knowledge, and we make our mistakes, and mistakes are good because we learn from them, and then we know how to do things better the next time, and the next time, and the next time. And it became clear to me that many court cases that I've been involved with getting into the courts where they hold the case open, it goes on forever. They just don't want to let you go, but at the same time, they don't want to conclude. And the reason for that is because they know they're guilty, and we need to take advantage of that, especially here now. When we went up to the United States Supreme Court, and one of the first papers that we filed to the United States Supreme Court, we informed them that there was subversion against the United States by enemies both foreign and domestic. And we laid things out. And we did what was called a 412. That was one of the first papers we filed. And they remained totally silent. They didn't respond. They did nothing. That says they are guilty, period.
Right.
End of subject.
Right.
Nothing to speak about. Because as a matter of fact, the law requires action when subversion is reported. It requires action. And the only action they took was to send people to us, particularly me and maybe a few others. You know, they sent the FBI and some other federal agencies, and that was their action. And of course, they wouldn't even reveal why they came to see me or who brought some kind of a concern, or they didn't really bring charges against me, but they were concerned. They had a lot of questions.
But they don't
tell you anything. So anyway, that's to our advantage. But the key thing is this, and here's the point I'm trying to make, and we've said this numerous times over the months, and that is that if you're on the defensive, you're losing, okay?
Right.
If you're on the offense and they're on the defense, you're winning. And especially when the court remains silent with these things, you're really winning. The key thing is that you got to ask yourself the question, what do I do next? Why are they silent? What can I do to irritate that silence even more? To provoke them, frighten them, to lay out the law to them that might put a little fear, and maybe they'll decide to do the right thing in this case. So anyway, that's an important point. That silence proves and shows guilt.
Oh, no, and I've heard you say that before and allude to that, and you know, because when I listen to the recordings, it's so much that I haven't heard yet that if I listen to enough of them, then I'll kind of get the context of why you're saying what you're saying. But yeah, so basically, what what happened is that kind of prompted me to be curious in the judiciary is that I was interacting with one of the federal agencies in my area, the VA, the Veterans Administration. And what came out of that, I was pursuing trying to obtain some information, and was in the executive suite area, so this is the facility director area, and folks in there, you know, hit the panic button, and then, of course, you know, the VA police came, and I decided to wait outside, right outside the doors, and they came, and they did their, you know, quick assessment of was there any problems, and there was none, and, you know, and got a little bit of information from me, and I turned out okay, and no warrants. So then I just went on about my business, and we parted ways. 2 months later, I'm at a meeting in Sacramento, and it's for a state agency that I had filed a complaint with against a VA social worker. So I'm attending a board meeting. Well, what the result was that the same day, and I later found this out, that the same VA facility drafted a federal citation that they claimed they gave me the date of the initial contact. And they mailed it off to a place called the Central Violations Bureau. All these federal citations go to a central place in San Antonio, Texas. And by the way, this organization is called Central Violations Bureau, or CVB. Well, CVB, it turns out, falls under the AO, which is the Administrative Office of the Courts, I just mentioned earlier. So they processed it. Now, because they didn't get the contact information, the date, I mean, the address and all of this from me, they actually got it from the computers. And when they sent it to CVB, CVB received it. It didn't have a complete address. And I later found out that the CVB regulation said that they would return it to the agency, but they did not. They completed the address, and they sent it to the address. Well, I never received it because it was an outdated address. Didn't receive it. It was a notice to appear. Didn't show up in court. And this was November 1st of last year. So when I didn't show up, they continued it, of course, because they want the money. It's mostly about money.
Now, this is federal, and this is VA, I think you mentioned, so this is administrative.
That's right. This is administrative.
Right. So, yeah, administrative has, you know, well, go ahead. Finish your story.
Okay. So
just don't make it too long.
Okay, I won't make it too long. Okay, I'll try to wrap it. So eventually they find me, and when I say they, according to Rule 58, it says that the criminal procedure, I went out to, and it says that the clerk is supposed to contact me. Now, the clerk didn't contact me. The federal defender did. And they,
yeah, well, they don't. Well, when you said they fined you, okay, they gave you a fine. Did you pay that fine?
No. They found me. They found me. They located me.
Found you.
Okay. So they located me because they had a bad address.
Okay.
So they did locate me. I don't know how they did it, but they located me. And they sent, in the process, they sent out three letters to three different addresses that they found for me. Because the address the VA had in the system was probably 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I had a P.O. box in there. I think I had two P.O. boxes and then a physical address that they was not aware of. So they sent me a letter. So just before Thanksgiving, I get this letter. Okay. I drop everything I'm doing. I launch my investigation. My investigation was so deep and so thorough, so broad, that I forced the VA to change their story about the events that they cited on the federal citation. They literally changed the story. Okay, So now I've got the VA to change the story. The court has jumped in. They're trying to cover up the federal defender's office who got involved. They're trying to cover
up. So somehow this moved into a court now? It left for an administrative court and went into a serious court
An
equity court?
I haven't been in front of the judge yet. I haven't been in court yet.
Yeah, but you see, what is exactly the issue?
Okay, the issue is, well, there's a couple of issues. Well, the main issue is that the VA has falsified these documents and sent it into the court system. U.S. attorney has a copy. Federal defender got, they were there at the hearing. So they've pushed this. They've not only falsified it and put it into motion, but after I launched my investigation, they then changed their whole story. So my understanding that's called estoppel.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Once they have a contradiction within their statements,
right.
And that's it.
Right.
It's done. It's over. Everything
it's done.
Is worthless. Yes.
Right.
That's
so,
true. But they're coming out against you for something. Were you employed with them or? A service person?
Well, it goes back to me partly being in Sacramento the same day that they cited it, because I was on the offensive. I've always been on the offensive with them. I've never been on the defense. Okay, so what they decided to do was to show me by putting it into the court system that we're going to put this fake issue in the courts on him. I launched my investigation, uncovered it, made them change their story. Now, so ultimately what this comes down to is this. Yes, I hear what you've been saying about these courts and being on the offense and opening, and challenging jurisdiction. But here's the thing. The body of documentation that I have now, especially with the estoppel, okay, and these other things, and in addition to that, these other entities have jumped in and tried to provide, aid and comfort to the VA in various ways that I have documented as well. It seems now that I may not want to challenge it, that I may want to actually have it go through their phony process because my evidence is so overwhelming.
Yeah, but what is the spark of this case, though? I mean, what is the purpose? What exactly took place that caused this case?
It was retaliation. Again, I was in Sacramento going in front of a board that I'd already filed.
Yeah, but
what does the VA
have to do with that? Is this
Well, let me tell you, the board was the board that licenses VA social workers. I was there. I had filed a complaint and also filed a State Open Records Act request and never got the information, and they never processed the request. So I'd gone to Sacramento to go in front of the board. Once they realized who I was and they knew who I was fairly quickly, I believe they contacted the VA and the VA sprung into action.
Okay, but let's see. So you went and spoke to a board concerning certain problems, and these people, the purpose of the board is watch something with social workers or something? What was that?
It's the licensing and oversight of social workers, and they
okay.
also like
so but what,
the VA social
so
workers.
What jurisdiction do they have over you?
It's not over me. My complaint was against the social worker and the social
right,
worker.
Right, but my point is that you made a complaint to them, and then what happened? That went into the VA administrative process?
No, it didn't go into the VA administrative process, but it would negatively impact the VA as a whole.
Yeah, but I'm just missing, the jurisdiction that they're claiming over you. I mean, they're pulling you
no
into
one's
court.
Claiming,
taking them
no
court.
One's claiming. Well, no. The only person claiming no one's claiming jurisdiction at this point. The only time I've been into the court is when they finally located me and sent me a letter. They said, "Come." This is the federal defender. Federal defender.
Okay,
wrote
but they
a letter,
just you as a witness, or are they calling you a defendant?
Well, they're calling me a defendant. This is
okay.
I'm still at the preliminary stages. I haven't
okay,
even seen the judge yet.
Okay, but the point is this: what jurisdiction, what authority, what do you work somehow in this process that you're under their jurisdiction, or are you just one of the people? Maybe you're a veteran, maybe you're not, but you're just one of the people, and they have no authority over you.
Well, yes, and that's the point that I'm making. So I have two ways I could look at this. I could approach it from the NLA standpoint, which is you have no authority, and I'm clear on that because I actually spoke to a federal defender somewhere else, and they talked about what they have in these courts, in these federal courts, is that you have to wind up, not have to, but they wind up giving you forms, and these forms actually have you waiving your...
Yes,
exactly. So, and I've also read somewhere else where someone was talking about, a federal police officer was saying, well, we're having a problem because people are waiving, they're not waiving the jurisdiction. So he even admitted it, that's a challenge. So I understand about the waiver.
Right, whenever you sign any kind of a government form, government paper for anything, you got to be real careful. You have, like the HIPAA, people sign HIPAA all day long. And what people don't understand about HIPAA is, and this is ridiculous. Okay, look it. Doctors and, you know, any kind of a doctor's office, dentist's office, any kind of a medical thing, hospitals, whatever, they cannot share your medical records with anyone for any purposes without your permission or a court order, period, end of subject, nothing else to talk about. That's been like that as far as I can remember since I was, when I became conscious of any of these things, that's been the way it's been, okay? Nothing has ever changed. But what HIPAA does is it gets you to sign a paper that they're going to make sure and secure that that doesn't happen. But by the way, when you're signing this paper, this is also allowing the government full access to all your records anywhere, anytime, period, end of subject. That's what that HIPAA form is all about. And I did in the beginning sign HIPAA forms many years ago when I didn't have knowledge, but I refused to sign those forms. I've also been refused to be treated. The thing with that, or the problem with that, was really on their end, because most of these, doctors' offices and everything, they're corporatized. You know, they can't afford, I guess, the business, especially with the insurances and everything else. So they've got these corporate lawyers and everything set up in a corporate way. And so I told them, call your legal department because I'm going to sue you if you refuse to treat me. And and then I sat down, waited 5 or 10 minutes. They got off the phone. And they says, okay, you don't have to sign the form and have a seat. We'll call you when we're ready. So you don't have to sign those papers, but that's exactly what HIPAA does. Okay, it's giving the government complete access to your forms, and they're just telling you something that already is. You don't need to sign that. No one can get access into your medical records without either your permission or a court order. That's it, end of subject, nothing else to talk about.
Now, this is the link between the VA and the Sacramento State Board. VA shared some information, I'm almost certain, because when I got to Sacramento and was communicating with them, things were going smooth at first, and then there was some breaks there and some communication. They had time to communicate. And
well, let me ask you, because, you know, I still don't have a picture here, and a lot of the information you're giving me, I have no place to frame, you know, no framework to file it into, so I don't know what to do with the information you're giving me. Let's go back to the beginning. They didn't have your address. They finally got your address. They sent you a letter. They want you to come in, but you're not going in as a witness. You're going in as a defendant. Being you're going in as a defendant, what are the charges?
Oh, something like disruptive behavior, something like that.
Okay, let's say it's disruptive behavior, which means nothing anyway. Okay,
right.
The board didn't like hearing what you had to say. Okay, maybe voices were raised, who knows, who cares. You know, these things happen all the time. The most that they can really do is, if there's security there, is have you removed, and that's it. There's nothing more they really can do, unless, of course, you get violent with the person trying to remove you, then that could escalate. But then that has nothing to do with the administrative process of these people. That would then be a lawful situation because it escalated into a lawful situation. So the point is this. They have absolutely no jurisdiction whatsoever over you, period. Nothing.
Okay.
They
okay,
can't.
Let me crystallize it like this. Melissa's prosecution, in order for one to
go in under malicious prosecution. A defendant, let's say a defendant who was charged by the government and prevails in that whole process, could then come back if they meet, you know, certain criterias, and I think I would meet all of them, and one of them being you have to prevail in the issue. They can come back with a suit of malicious prosecution.
You're saying malicious prosecution?
Malicious prosecution. Okay. And what that and the key element is that you have to prevail. Now, in this current issue, so now let me shoot back to when they asked me to come in.
Okay, try to make it a little short because we're building up.
I'm cutting it down now. When they asked me to come back in, I thought it was the initial appearance, according to Rule 58. It wasn't. What they have is what they call a voluntary settlement conference. So they threaten you and scare you in the letter when you get in. Then they say, oh, it's all voluntary. Okay.
All of the agencies do the same thing, you know, and the biggest one for those are the IRS. They have all these tricks to get you to, commit to their administrative process.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Okay. So when I came in, I sat with them, and a few things happened in there before I actually sat with them. I was the last one to go in, and they had an officer from the VA in there, and they were trying to figure out something and figure out what the deal was. And I just said, look, I want to go in front of the judge, and walked out, set me a trial date. I could see what they were trying to do. So ultimately, what I'm saying is this. I know the NLA position about the jurisdiction, but it would be beneficial, I believe, given the overwhelming amount of evidence that I have and documentation, okay, and proof, direct evidence, not circumstantial, but direct, that I would prevail, and then it would provide a firm foundation for me to go back and do the malicious prosecution. So I hear you.
Well, again, they're not prosecuting you. Remember that. They don't have the power to fine or incarcerate. Okay, remember that too. Okay, and it's just really you're getting tied up into something that maybe, these people are very tricky. The whole process is, but if they're protecting status quo and you're trying to reveal the evil of that protection, you got to be real careful because you may end up in a situation where you get what you want and then they may turn the tables against you. Okay. And who knows where that could go. So I don't know that it's worth going through the process.
Here's what's that issue. If they win, I pay $130. If they lose, I come back with a malicious prosecution suit.
Mm-hmm.
With all the evidence that I
don't
have.
On that's nothing that puts you into a jeopardy, really. I mean, but even if you don't go in, you don't have to give them nothing because they have no jurisdiction.
No, I get that, but you think, okay?
But they're paper tigers.
Well, no, I understand that. And here's the one pin that I'm trying to avoid. According to Rule 58, the U.S. attorney can dismiss the case any time up before trial. Now, I've already sent this paperwork through my state senator and asked them to send it to the DOJ. I've outlined the estoppel. I've outlined a lot of stuff that's happened. DOJ in Washington, silent. I'm sorry, U.S. Attorney's Office, silent. Okay? Silent. It's been up there 6 months. Silent. So, that tells me, as you said earlier, I'm on the right track.
Yeah, but again, look, I want to tell you something, okay? And this is with every bureaucrat that you come into contact with. And we got to move on to the next caller after this. But, these people are trained, okay? They're not trained to serve. They're trained to protect the status quo. They also are trained to resist giving any information out or admitting to anything. So you can never really get a good conversation where you can get information that they would commit that, yeah, we shouldn't be doing this, or yeah, you're right, we've got to see what we can do to fix that problem. They're not interested in that kind of a conversation, okay? So it really doesn't go anywhere. But, you know, again, if you want to spend the time, if you think it's worth it to go through that whole process, then that's fine. But I don't, for me, you know, traffic violations. I don't really bother too much fighting them. I'll write a paper, send it in. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Then they'll tell me what the fine is and I'll just pay the stupid fine. I just don't have time to mess with it. Now, I may. I'll do it. I'll pay everything with prejudice, okay? And that's the key thing for any paper that you sign. You want to put without prejudice. You know what I mean,
right.
And you want to take that and you know at a future time maybe and deal with it. That's what I might do. I might deal with all those traffic violations at a future time. But you know that's not the real battle. The real battle is where we're at right now in the courts to bring justice back into the courts and get rid of all these administrative processes or that are violating the people's rights that they have no authority over. They don't have the jurisdiction. But if you got a final word for, you know, a minute or so, go right ahead, and then we're going to move to the next call.
Well, I think if we could spend a few minutes offline, I would maybe communicate it slightly differently, and you could, you know, ask some different questions. But I think this includes the Federal Defender's Office, the AO. It sounds like you may not be directly familiar with the AO.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, and once you're familiar with the AO, you will see that we're talking about the same thing. This is the office that supports the judiciary, that supports the Supreme Court. This is the administrative arm of the Supreme Court and the whole entire federal judiciary. That's why I called.
Well, if you want to talk to me about the details of that, not necessarily the case, because I don't think the case is, you know, again, it's up to you whether you want to pursue something like that. But in order to give us information concerning that office and what maybe you may have learned about that and the connections and to give us some wisdom and understanding on that, okay, fine, we could do that.
Okay.
Get a hold of Jan, but wait a week or two because I got a lot of work going on right now. But maybe in 2 weeks or so, get a hold of Jan. During the day, and he'll try to catch me somewhere, and we can talk for a short while. Okay?
Okay, and get the Jan through the email.
What's your first name again?
Janet. My last name's.
What's your first
name? Stacy.
Stacy, okay. Yeah. You can just get Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org.
Okay.
And you can find his information and phone number under our directory.
Okay?
All
right, bye.
Okay, with that, I see Brent is here. Brent, do you want to take the mic? I see Brent is muted at the moment, so you should be able to unmute yourself, *6. There you go.
There you go. Boy, it's amazing how long it takes an otherwise intelligent people to find buttons and figure out how to unmute them.
Well, you should see the board we have. Let me tell you, you can't find
any
buttons. Oh,
yeah.
We're looking for a new place to live. We're definitely not going to stay here. But, okay, you want to speak for a while?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Thank you very much.
So I'm
all
fit an introduction here. First, okay? And by the way, I dropped some papers. I dropped the paper off. We're ready to serve this week. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it or we'll get it,
okay.
But it's in your box on Skype, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
We got Crystal in the queue if you want to listen to her now.
Okay, we'll take Crystal first, and then we'll come back to you, Jan. Brent, all right?
Okay, that's good. Uh-huh.
Okay,
Thanks.
Let's see. Hopefully I don't disconnect. I guess just clicking her phone will unmute her. Go ahead, Crystal.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. Hi. Now, as you know, on August 7th, they put me up. They stole my house from me. There was over 100 witnesses that witnessed the whole thing. I called the Trumbull Police. And said, I need your protection because the criminals are stealing my home. That attorney, Mark Krosno, terminated my name from my property and put his name on there on January 18th. And then he sold my house to his friend, which I in turn re-recorded my warranty deed back into my name, so the house is back in my name. Nobody looked at the contract, okay, because that's the work I did for 49 years. So everybody's been watching my case because I've been representing myself in the court and stuff, okay? And so I sent you all the copies. When they tried to transfer, they changed it. I sent you all my mortgage release and stuff like that, because that's the work I did for 49 years. I did thousands, 10,000 recordings of deeds, okay? So now when they pulled this stunt on me, everybody, I've been getting calls from the radio stations. I've been getting calls from the TV media. Everybody is watching my case now. So I contacted our Congress, Blumenthal, Murphy, all of them, in the state of Connecticut. Okay? I said, I am a disabled, elderly person, and my home has been paid for. And they said, oh, well, you stopped making payments. I said, no. I said, GE Credit Union stole $250,000, and I asked for proof of claim in the contract. No one has a contract, and who got the money? So it went into somebody's pocket. Now, I also filed a police report on the criminals at all the attorneys, which I put an affidavit of truth, naming everybody from time to, you know, and I said it first of all, because anything over $20, you can have a common law jury, number one. Number two, everything, okay, you can have a common law jury after $20 on up. Number two, you have 1 year to prove that you have a legitimate case. This case, when they changed my title, with Becker is the one who put the names on my property, it was, they started this in 2014 when he put his name on my property. So, number one, so that was kicked up the ball. I sent them the letters of subrogation showing the proof of claim. I've asked them to discharge. Four judges recused themselves from my case, and about five different law firms recused themselves and got off my case. So this is where we stand right now. So I am at my house, and when I called, they said, oh, well, I have even put applications in, what have you, just in the case with a backup. And what happened, so I called Blumenthal's office, and I said, look, I'm homeless, I'm penniless, you sold all my furniture, you got everything. Now I'm going to talk about over. We're going to sell your stuff off. This was the marshal. He said, they're going to sell my stuff off. But also they said, well, can you sit there and give a sign, this paper waiver? I said, I'm not signing anything. I said, this was your call. You deal with it. Now when I called, they said, I said, now where do I go? I got not one penny. So now today they were taking the siding off, the aluminum siding off my house. And that's worth about almost $25,000, which I said, so everybody's like, how come she's so calm? Honey, wait for their explosion. All righty. So what had happened? So they told me to call the Department of Aging and what have you. So I complied. I called every last person. This is what's going on in Connecticut. There is no shelter. They're all filled up. I said, I'm a total disabled person. I said, I don't have my clothes. They took everything. So I said, now, I said, you gave me this number to call, and there's a waiting list for 2 months. So where do I live now? Since you stole my house, you put me out on the street. I said, I paid for everything. You didn't give me 1 cent. And now they told me to go on welfare, or they could put me in a shelter. Now, all the shelters are filled the capacity. And I said, well, wait a minute, I'm a disabled person. I have special needs. Well, we don't have this for disabled people. So I said, well, so is that why all the people are living on the street and living under the viaduct? I said, this is what our so-called politicians are doing to the elderly and disabled people. You know, so tomorrow morning you will hear the fireworks. Okay?
Do you have a plan, though, to force some kind of justice somewhere, or are you still just fighting each point and trying to get someplace to get your home back?
Well, no, the house is still in my name. I'm not worried about that. See.
Yeah, but meanwhile, you've been dispossessed, your belongings, all your stuff. What did they do with all your things? Did they put them in the storage?
Oh, yes. They put it in the storage in the town of Trumbull, 15 days, and they said I would have to pay. And so...
Well, look at that. Listen, Crystal, I really think you should... You could continue doing everything you're doing, but I really think you should do a joinder with us, and we can pull your case in and see if we could do something with it.
Okay. Bye.
They have abrogated the common law. They believe that, okay? When you talk to a judge about it, if you talk to a lawyer, okay, they're fine with that because they've been taught, the bar attorneys, bar-educated attorneys, okay, they have been taught that the common law is the trial court decisions and even Supreme Court decisions, but all trial court decisions, you can use that. That's the common law. And what they did, they're saying, well, that they tried to give a picture of that. From what I can understand, the way they've trained these attorneys coming up, that was the common law, and they fused them together. They fused equity and common law together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a fact, so that, because someone had sent something to me a little while ago, and I started looking into it, and I already knew that they had made this, these changes and all this stuff. And I've heard about abrogating the common law, and they talk about Supreme Court.
John, before you go, me.
Here's the point to that.
John, let me finish what I gotta say. You see, this is the work I did. I'm the one who did it. The attorneys, the appraisers, Connecticut's New Hollywood. My husband was a bank manager. I owned over 12, 13 properties. This is the life use. Remember I was teaching you? Get certain things out your name, the grant. Mine is all completed. Okay? So what they did to me, and this is what I'm trying to give you the information, all righty? Because, number one, remember when I put that affidavit of truth, I had everything notarized. It's amended to my records. My records, everything, the mortgage release, I sent you the copy. Now, yeah. This is where I'm listening to what I'm saying because this will help everybody. So what I did, I put the whole thing, even the police criminal records, on the attorneys. Now they're all jumping through the hoops because now, well, they got my stuff, but now they're like, well, what do we do with it? I said, oh, by the way, when it's auctioned off, who gets the proceeding of it? Well, it's the town of Trumbull. Oh, okay, thank you. So you allow, I have the police report, and then my cousin, who am the executive for that, the attorneys, nurse's aide, lied and put her name as the daughter. So I got criminal charged them. So this is two times I was robbed from my house and my cousin's house, and the Trumbull police stood there and let the criminals rob me. But the most beautiful thing of it all, there was over 100 people that came out for me, and I didn't even know they were all there. And so everybody's watching my case all over the country. I've been getting calls.
You need to get a conclusion. You need to get your home back. And I know you've done all of the work to secure it, but you're still not in it. And what I'm saying to you is you should continue what you're doing, maybe. Get it out to as many people as you can. Continue to change the papers back.
I got something tomorrow. You're going to get something major on me, and it's going to help you and everybody else. I don't want to go over the phone with you, okay? But I'm just, I will get it over to you. And this will help.
I think you should consider seriously at the same time, you know, why keep all your apples in one basket? Get a joinder going, and we'll try to help from this end.
Okay, but as I said, mine is completed. Okay, I'm going to be fine with mine. But as I said, I'm going to send you the stuff so it will help the people. And what I'm doing now, too, I've got some groups together because I want them to learn through the National Liberty Alliance, and we want it in the school system. And so the kids could have part-time jobs. That's what I'm focusing on. Because how can you help anybody if you don't even know who the basic number one, who's the highest in the land? It's the judge. I mean, it's the sheriff. So these are things that we need to know and the kids need to know. And and learning in your course. And you said you had a book coming out. So that's, but I will speak to you, you know, because I don't want, you know, but I wanted to stay awake. And I just fill you in. They got a GoFundMe page also because I am like penniless, but I'm okay. But this is what I'm sharing it with you, and I thank Jehovah God because you know I was the one going into the court defending myself, and I never had an attorney nor a lawyer, and but I always had Jehovah God, Jesus Christ. So, but as I said, this is just absolutely crazy. And I saw Blumenthal and all the rest of it, and they would run out. But tomorrow morning, I will deal with all of them because now you took my home and the place. Is that why all the people in New York, California, all over are laying on the street? Minimum wage will be $49. You know.
Mhm. All right. Well, look. Why don't you try to get me during the week? I don't know that this is a good week to get me, but you know, you could try.
Okay.
And let's talk, and we'll see what you got and what you want to do. But again, and right now you're coming in a little gobbly. I don't know whether it's you know the service that we're using or maybe your phone that you're calling in on. But to me, you sound very, very gobbly. I mean, I'm understanding.
Yeah. Okay.
You, it's very hard to at the same time.
Because I'm on my phone. Correct? Yeah. I'm on my cell phone, but I just wanted to clear you. And I'll be in touch with you, okay?
Okay.
But I just wanted to give you a heads up. Have a good evening.
Get to me through Jan, okay?
Definitely. All right. Have a good night.
All right. Good night. Okay, before we go to the next caller, we're first going to take Brent on, and he's going to talk to us for a while, and then we'll go back to the open forum. Brent is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. It's a book written by Brent Allen Winters. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you, and I appreciate, of course, letting me say a few words. As I always appreciate it every week, and the comments I make are my own, and not necessarily the opinions of National Liberty Alliance. We've been going through the Constitution of the United States. We began with the Declaration of 76. We went through it. And then we started in on the Constitution of the United States, clause by clause, blow by blow. We've been working our way through it. We're all the way up. Now all the way up to Article 1, and we're in Section 10, Clause 1. Let me read it again. Be a good idea, like the old law professor said. Well, if we're going to discuss something about the Constitution, some case in the Supreme Court, maybe we ought to read the provision first. That's true. Let's read it. No state, it says, shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque and reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Now remember, this clause applies to the individual states
We call them sister states of our union. That's what the courts call them. Not a bad way to say it, sister states. This clause applies to the states. The clause before applies to the general government in Washington, D.C. It is similar, as they say here, but not the same. It says this, no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office or profit of trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept any present, emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Now notice, though, again, I'd mentioned this last time, this clause that applies to the general government in Washington, D.C., about titles of nobility and gifts and anything whatever, it says, from a king or a foreign prince or a foreign state. This is not an absolute prohibition. It says, without the consent of Congress. Now, it's an absolute prohibition without the consent of Congress. But if Congress consents, a title of nobility from a foreign state may be granted to an American. That's right. To an American holding an office of profit or trust under them, plural, T-H-E-M, what's them? Well, that refers back to the states, plural, the United States, the general government that the United States has established in Washington, D.C. So the grand difference is we call it the federal government today. We really should be calling it the general government, but it's the federal government can grant or can allow a title of nobility to be granted by a foreign state or a prince or a king or an emperor to an American office holder. But no state shall grant any title of nobility, period. Well, now also we want to point out that the federal government can't grant any title of nobility either, period. But they can allow other people to accept them. I've never known of a case where that happening. I've never read where that has ever happened. Maybe it has. I don't know. Haven't ran across it. Well, let's talk about some of the other things here. It says, no state in this clause, no state shall emit bills of credit. Big words. Oh, fancy words. Emit? What does that mean? Emit. Well, that means to issue, to hand out. Why they just don't say hand out, I don't know. But that's what it says, and we can look up the word emit means to hand out. And it bars, this clause bars any state from issuing paper money. This clause bars any state from issuing paper money. You know, years ago when I used to read the cases about states would say you can pay your taxes, but you have to pay them with paper money from this bank or that bank. That's the way they used to do it. Because banks had authority to issue paper money, bills of credit. That's what paper money is. It's a bill of credit. It's a debt instrument. And it says no state shall make anything tender, any tender in payment of debts, anything, legal tender is what it's called. Anything but gold and silver coin. Well, let's get it right. Does it say coin? No. But yeah, it does. It says gold and silver coin is the only thing that any one of the 50 states of the United States is allowed, by our Constitution, is allowed to make legal tender in payment of debts. Well, what does that mean, legal tender in payment of debts? Legal tender laws are laws that say things like this. They say, if someone owes you $100 and they tender, that means to hold out to you, offer it to you, put in front of you, send you in the mail, try to give to you a bill, a United States Federal Reserve note that says $100 on it, and you refuse it because you want gold or silver. Well, if the law says that that bill is legal tender, you can't go into a court and get judgment for gold and silver. But if the legal tender law then says gold and silver is legal tender, gold and silver coin, and somebody owes you $100, and you say, I don't want gold and silver coin, I want greenbacks. Well, if this fella that owed you the $100 offered it the gold and silver coin, the legal tender law says gold and silver coin is legal tender, and he holds it out to you and you refuse to take it, well, he doesn't owe you anything. Legal tender laws make certain things payment in for debts if they're just tendered, held out and offered. Well, no state of the United States has the ability to make anything but gold or silver coin legal tender. We've gone so far from this. We've gone so far that even Judge Bork, when they were trying to appoint him to the Supreme Court, if you remember, Judge Bork wrote several books after that. He was a federal appellate judge, smart fella. He wrote a book, and he said that we as Americans have gone so far, strayed so far, ignored so much these clauses of our Constitution of the United States that there's no going back. It's not even possible. Why? Well, because we've done it the wrong way for so many decades now that it is our law. Now, is that true? Well, when it comes to law, especially in our common law tradition, custom becomes law. Our common law is our custom. It's the things that have been handed, the standards that have been handed down to us. That's what a custom is. It's a tradition. A tradition is not a bad word unless you're handing down bad. It means to hand down. That's what the Latin word means, tradition. And that's not a bad thing if you're handing down good things. Paul the Apostle says, I've been faithful to the tradition, what has been handed down to me. What was he talking about? He was talking about the gospel of God. The great gospel of God was a tradition that was handed to him, like a baton in a relay race. It was handed off. Well, that's good, but there are traditions that are very ugly and very bad also. Religious traditions of high church people are very bad, very ugly, a lot of them. Matter of fact, just flat blasphemous. Not to get into the details, I'm just making the distinction. Some things are good, some things are bad. Paul the Apostle says, test all things, and that which is good, keep. Well, it has become our tradition to accept anything other than gold or silver coin for money. And it has enslaved us. We have allowed powerful bankers to enslave us. And the results of that are overwhelming. We just heard one story. We've been hearing it a long time about a lady that lost her house. She's been a faithful listener on Monday nights, and she's given us faithful reports about how she was thrown out of her house. That's the result of banking. It's theft. It's called legal. It's not. It's just flat theft. Why? Because it's usurious. Usurious is stealing. Usury is stealing. Even if it's just 1%. Any amount of usury amounts to stealing money. How do I know? Because God said so. How do I know what God said is true? Well, if he's God, if he's the maker of heaven and earth, what he says goes. The will of the sovereign is law. Well, what about the evidence? How do you know that's what he said? Well, I read it in the Bible. Well, how do you know the Bible's true? Well, I've got plenty of good evidentiary reasons to believe the Bible's true, and if you're interested in knowing what they are, get my comparative law text, Excellence of the Common Law, 958 pages of comparing and contrasting the law of the land and the law of the city. Well, it's not the final word on anything. I'm just saying, if you want to know what I think, get it. You may not agree, but that's what I think. And I'm convinced the Bible's true. And you can go to the back of that, look in the appendix, and you can find a long appendix of evidence why I believe that the writings of the Bible are reliable evidence of what God said. And if you're persuadable, I think you'll be persuaded. If you have a premonition, or not a premonition, but if you have a preformed idea before you ever saw the evidence that the Bible's not true, you'll disagree anyway. It won't make any difference. But if you want to know the reasons why, the evidentiary reasons why, at common law, do these evidentiary reasons pass the test of the common laws of evidence, not to mention the laws of evidence the Bible presents? You can go read it there. But the question I want to address here real quick is, what if we have been decades away from our Constitution at any point? Is Judge Bork right? Does that mean that it's no longer law? Well, it may mean that we've developed such an ugly system that we're so entwined with we can't get out of it, and we have, called the banking system. The banking system of fraud and usury. Usury is fraud, and vice versa. We're so entwined in it. We're so entwined in debt. We're so entwined in international banking as a country. We're so far off base for so long, and so much has been built up around what is wrong, that it's become an animal unto itself, a system unto itself, an evil system, that Judge Bork says there's no sense trying to go back. Well, I disagree. I like Judge Bork, but I think if the Constitution of the United States says it and we deviate from it, we need to come back. You know what? That's true of Magna Carta also. They say in England today that there's only one particular paragraph, they call them chapters, but they're just little paragraphs, a few sentences, one little paragraph that is still fully in force in Britain. And that is the paragraph that says that no man's life, liberty, or property shall be taken without, well, it doesn't say it just that way, but the whole idea is without judgment of his peers, that the king shall not move upon his life, liberty, or property. Shall he be seized or taken, et cetera? You can read it there. They say that's still in force, and that's good law. But the rest of it is largely, it's not good law anymore. Why? Well, because it's been ignored, and we don't do that anymore. Is that true? Frankly, no, it's not true. Why is it not true? I don't care what they say. I don't care what their legal beagles say. They're wrong. Why do I say that? I don't care how many law professors you pile up from Harvard and Berkeley and University of Minnesota and Yale. How many you pile up that say otherwise? They're all wrong. Ever learning, never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. Why? Because the principles of our Constitution, just as also the principles of Magna Carta, the first principles there don't change. They're the same. The application is different. I remember reading in Magna Carta. Magna Carta talks about fish weirs. Fish weirs. A fish weir has to do with catching fish in the river, the Thames River. Well, there were so many of them in the river, Magna Carta addresses the problem. It was hampering navigation of boats and barges. It had to do with the division between admiralty law and common law. Navigation of water traffic. Well, they don't have that problem in the Thames River anymore. So does that mean it doesn't that it's not good law? No, it doesn't mean that at all. The principle there of the division of admiralty and common law is good law still. It's just that in those days they were applying it to a problem they don't have today. The law didn't change. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not covet, lie, commit adultery, steal, or murder your neighbor. All of those to be worthwhile must be applied to your particular circumstances, your particular life. Just because they're old and it doesn't say how they apply doesn't mean they don't apply. No, those principles apply. They apply now, big time. It's wrong to covet, lie, steal, commit adultery, or murder your neighbor. And if we just concentrate on that simplicity, apply it to your own life, we'd get far. Well, just because we don't use something doesn't mean that its principle does not imply. Paper is not good money. I don't care what they say. Gold and silver coin are, no question about it. Well, let's talk about a little bit, maybe one more thing. Talked about gold and silver coin. We talked about earlier states withdrawing from the Union and forming confederacies. That's forbid. This clause C forbids that. That's why we had that terrible war. The people in the North said, well, it says in the Constitution you can't do that. You can't form a confederacy. Alliance. No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, confederation. Well, they did that. Of course, their argument back was, we're not part of the Union anymore. We left the Union, then we confederated. Well, they had a point there. That was different. The question really came down to, was it possible under the law, under our Constitution, for them to leave the Union? They said it was, and the North said it wasn't. That's why they had that terrible war. It follows, therefore, I'm reading from a common lawyer comments on the Constitution of the United States, clause by clause. It follows, therefore, that if the general government, that's the government of Washington, D.C., whether by statute or protective banking monopoly, requires that requires the people of the United States to accept paper banknotes in payment of debts, it forces the states to violate, under unconstitutional force, this clause of our Constitution. That's what they're doing. To ensure defeat, I'm going to continue reading here. To ensure defeat of this clause's requirement, national law has, for more than 90 years, given the Federal Reserve Bank Board, uncounted more than 90 years. When did I write this? Let's see. Oh, it's more than 100 years now. Given the Federal Reserve Bank Board unconstitutional self-serving control, and from 1933 to 1978 barred enforcement of gold clauses in contracts for payments of debts. That's 31 U.S.C. Section 5118, subsection D2, repealing the barring of gold clauses, allowing debts to be paid in gold. You can pay your debts in gold now. Well, it was never good law anyway, but they tried to stop people. But now there is no federal statute stopping you from paying your debts in gold and silver. In fact, legislation forbids auditing the Federal Reserve Bank. Can you believe that? Yes. Congress says no one has the right to audit the Federal Reserve Bank. And hence, the power of the Federal Reserve Bank is absolute. They answer to no one. Their lawlessness runs amok. When you stop to really ponder that Congress passed a law forbidding the auditing of the Federal Reserve Bank, that should incense Americans to the point that they want to bite ten penny nails in two. Well, if they aren't auditable, then the Federal Reserve Bank answers to no one. The most powerful institution in our country, or controlling our country, controlling the government of the United States, printing money, printing it, that's counterfeiting, and acting like it has value. And they're not allowed to be audited. Ron Paul screamed to high heavens about that when he was running for president. That became his number one, it's the controlling question, that's why he said it's number one. So to sum up for today, our Constitution demands that the state courts can enforce a creditor's offer, that means his tender, only of gold and silver coin for payment of debts. This does not bar a creditor from accepting other kinds of payment, but it does bar state courts from enforcing an offer of any other kind of payment other than gold and silver coin to satisfy debt. Well, most sinister of all, the Federal Reserve bankers, by displacing real money with mere paper and then devaluing it, encourage hoarding of gold and silver, driving these from circulation, further undermining our country's stability and prosperity. Why is it bad that they drive gold and silver from circulation? Well, are they? Well, the answer is yes. Listen to Sam Johnson. Sam Johnson wrote the first dictionary ever written in English. Sorry, that wasn't that long ago either, by the way. That's why spelling hasn't been standardized until very recently. This is Sam Johnson. I'm quoting him. He who never quotes is never quoted, so here I go. Gold and silver coin, said Sam Johnson, destroys feudal subordination. I like that. Gold and silver coin destroys feudal subordination. Now, how applicable is that today? Accordingly, I'm not quoting now, this is me. Accordingly, our Constitution bars government from forcing the use of any other kind of money upon Americans. Well, John, that's enough for today. Thank you again for giving me an opportunity to say a few words.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. Okay, we're going to go back to open forum here. Got a few people in the queue right now, so anybody wants to get in there, star 6 and a 1. Our next caller is, Werner from Montana. Is that right?
Hi, John. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
So I have a question about a traffic ticket. It's kind of a simple matter, but I'm a truck driver, and I got a ticket out in California. So they send me a thing. I've already done a joinder form. I emailed that off tonight. So because I have a CDL, is it still possible to challenge their jurisdiction?
That's a very good question. Probably, but I don't know. I got to think about that. I never looked or thought on the commercial side who should be handling those particular cases, because you are a commercial driver, and you do have to abide by the rules. It's the law. They are federal. I think they're state, aren't they? Yeah, they're state laws or rules. I'm sorry, say that again.
It was Highway Patrol, and they cited me under the California Motor Vehicle Code.
Right, it's state. So, I never thought about that. I don't have the answer for that. You may have a problem trying to challenge them, their jurisdiction, because they do have jurisdiction over you. You're in their jurisdiction. You're operating a commercial vehicle. They have certain codes and requirements that you have to follow. And when you break them, there's a consequence for that. Now, being that they are not a court of law, on the one hand, they would be a court of equity. I don't know how fining would go on that, because that's really where this is heading, to give you a fine, right?
Yeah, well, they've already levied the fine, apparently, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we can take that case as a joinder on to begin with, because and I have to really look into it. Maybe we can, and I don't, but I have no knowledge of. I never thought of that relationship, that part of it. As far as we, the people, we're not held under those requirements. We're not operating commercially. We don't have to obey their rules. You know, of course, if you're putting people's lives in jeopardy, that could be a different story. But they wouldn't be getting you on a traffic violation. You know, so
right.
So I don't know the answer for that. I never thought it out. Again, we do know that the local courts handle that. Okay, now you know, and if you look into the state, let me think about this a little bit. You know, if you look into the state and you look up the traffic laws in that particular state, there's got to be a jurisdiction mentioned in there. And where these hearings and or whatever those jurisdictions might be should identify where those hearings would be held. And it possibly, you know, it's a problem. And I'll tell you why, you know, and again, they create these problems. You know, I don't even know how to logically think it out, because first of all, let's take these town courts and village courts. If they didn't have or think they had the power and authority to stop people on the road, give them tickets, require them to come in and pay their fines. Now, they think they have that power. They really don't. The people think they have the power, and therefore they do have that power. That's the problem. We give them that power. And that's given to them first and foremost by ignorance, through ignorance. We could eradicate all that through education in our schools, proper education, and maybe by the next generation it could be, you know, dealt with. But the point is, though, that I'm trying to make is that everything they're doing is illegal, unlawful. Now, occasionally, I'm sure they get people that are commercially operating, but they don't get enough to keep those courts open. That's the point. Mm-hmm. So, if they weren't ticketing the people, they wouldn't have a court, a town or a city or well, let's leave the cities out of it for now. But the town or village courts, they wouldn't have them. Okay, they wouldn't have a police department. There'd be no village police. There'd be no village, no town police, and it would be left to state troopers on the state highways, ultimately, to some degree. And that's questionable too. Okay, I never really thought that one out either. The only one left is the sheriff, and sheriffs don't give tickets where they shouldn't be. There's no logical way to deal with this problem. I mean, clearly they're not going to fill up the federal courts with commercial, you know, activities and fines for moving violations and things of that nature. So I really don't have the answer, and I can't even think of a logical way this would run and be supported. So I don't know. Brent, you got any thoughts on that? I don't know, Brent may not be here at the moment, but I can't help you with anything more than that. So, You still there? Am I still here?
Yeah, you're still here, John. It looks like she hung up.
Okay. All right, we'll go to the next caller. Okay, let's see. A caller from Arizona. What's your first name?
Hi, this is Tamara.
How you doing, Tamara?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. You said something about sheriffs shouldn't be giving tickets anyway. Well, I was pulled over 2 weeks ago by the sheriff's department, and I immediately went...
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I immediately went to my dashboard and got off my little note that says it's not against the law, it's not illegal for me to be driving without a license plate or a license, and that it's not an arrestable offense. And they issued me a statutory instrument with a ticket on it. So they do write tickets.
Yeah, that's how degraded our sheriff's departments have become. To become
true.
Code enforcement officers. They are not code enforcement officers. They are law enforcement officers.
Yep. And my question is, however, though, back in June, I was unlawfully arrested, and I have this under joinder. The amicus curiae should be filed either tomorrow or the next day. And my question is they've already given me an order of protection. So if something happens and they warrant an issue for arrest and I'm pulled over again for not having a license plate, then what? Because they'll arrest me and take me to jail again, and I've done nothing wrong.
Well, this is the problem we have, and, you know, they've sent out swarms of code enforcement officers in order to fleece us and to make money. It's a cash machine. It's a business. Every town's in the game. I mean, there's a lot of money involved here. You know, whether they're going to fine you or put you in jail, in either case, they make money. And the state makes money because they get a piece of that action, too. There's a state attachment amount. I forget what they call it. But in any event,
when they do bond appearances, any type of bonding that they do, they trade that on the open market and make money off of it. It's absolutely unbelievable how they actually make money off of us.
Look, at our founding fathers had it with the government interfering with their lives. They tolerated it. It's written in the Declaration of Independence that to some degree we're going to tolerate these things, but when it gets that bad and we can't deal with it no more, we're going to shut it down. And that's what they did with the Declaration of Independence. And Thomas Jefferson was really the guy who discovered the freedom formula that we have. And he dug deep and he went all the way back and studied Israel. He found that how Israel was how that government process worked, and he also studied also other ancient he studied lots of different governments, and of course he came up with what we got here today, and we are a republic. We're labeled as a republic because we're a government. We have a government of law, so we're a people of law, but there are two sides of that law. One side is equity, where the government has the power and the authority to deal with all of the different situations within all the agencies lawfully. In half of the titles that are written for that, for instance, are law, and the other half are administrative. So there may be rules and regulations on one side, codes and statutes on the other side. But that's all equity. Okay, we gave them authority to control that, both in the commercial area and, of course, also in the political realm as far as different political agencies. Now, on the other side, as far as the people were concerned, totally separated from that is the law side. That's supposed to be natural law courts, where there is no government interference, where the people take care of their own business. Now, of course, we have a building that the government pays for. They're called courthouses for the purpose of dealing with both equity and law, okay? And they can charge a statutory fee for the commercial side of things. I think they can do that. And also they can charge, and also for the administrative side, I guess they could charge a fee there. I don't know that they normally do, within agency operations. Now you get to the law side. The only thing is the providing of the building and the providing of either the government and an administrator. That's it. Their participation is over other than that. That administrator, he's called a magistrate, or he or she, is called a magistrate. They're there to make sure the will of the jury is executed, okay? So they'll push forward the necessary enforcement of the will of that jury, okay? And that's this whole process was set up to totally prevent government from just constantly assaulting us and making money off us and maybe putting us as political prisoners. The abuse in history, you go all the way back, it's just unbelievable how much abuse government has always placed upon the people that they claim to rule over. But we're supposed to have a government that serves us. We're supposed to have servants. We're set up totally different, like no other nation ever before we are set up, and being 50 literally countries, actually. And we're one nation with a federal government, but the states are still supposed to be free. But the assault upon our liberty is so great. And again, we're going to be discussing that in detail next week. We're going to lay out the way that they had done that point by point, with the most important assaults that they have applied upon we the people in our history over the past couple of hundred years. And exactly where the big crime really, where they were heading to, came, where they claimed to have abrogated the common law, and right there on a federal government website for the courts, the federal courts, right on their website, they say it right out that they joined together both equity and law. That's an impossibility. That's like trying to mix water and oil. Can't be done. But that's what they claim to have done. But, of course, first they had to train people to think that, that common law is actually precedents, decisions from other trial courts and using that as precedents and of course, Supreme Court rulings and other rulings. And all those things are equity to begin with. But they applied in a court of the claim to be they do call it civil courts. They've changed the name and combined them together and call it civil court. And they got away with it because we fell asleep, because the people became too comfortable, because the people were ignorant. And of course, it was also by design. They purposely don't teach us what we should know. You know, Jefferson spoke about a proper education, and the people should have that, but we don't. They do have, our education in our country is centralized. They have approved curriculums, and if the schools don't fall under certain, approved curriculums, they're not acknowledged. And, of course, they'll never get any state funds. And as soon as they give them state funds or federal funds, of course, right away, that just ties them in, stuck to work with what the government says you have to do. Certain religious schools, of course, can get away with more. But nevertheless, the bottom line is we don't have a real good civics course. We don't have a constitutional course. We don't have any understanding of real American history. We don't have that in our schools. The three most important things we need, other than, of course, our relationship with God, is our relationship with our government, and that we are above them. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for them. That's the purpose of our Constitution. And everything we've written in there concerning the common law was on the side of saying you can't do this, you can't do that, and you can't do the other thing. We have the Bill of Rights. We have Article 1, Section 9. A lot of you can't do this, you can't do that. But as far as the only thing in there that really makes the point concerning where we live and ought to be under a rule is really on one statement where it talks about law and equity. We have courts of law and equity, and all federal district courts are courts of record. And they also teach these people that a court of record is a court that keeps a record. I mean, these people, it's just unbelievable what they have done with the turning around and the changing of the meanings of words. And they get away with it because we're ignorant. We never dig in.
I actually told the judge that after they arrested me, and they took me at 11 o'clock almost at night into a judge's courtroom. Mm-hmm. I said to him, "Are you a court of record?" And he says, "I'm recording this." And I said, "That doesn't mean you're a court of record." I said, "First of all, you're biased and you're prejudiced. You married my husband and his new wife 6 months before I was divorced from him, and you work with him." And he said, "Well, I'm ruling on that. I don't feel that I'm prejudiced or biased, and we're going to continue with this." And he put me in jail for nothing. Yeah.
They make it up as they go. They do what they want. They don't even abide by their own rules, regulations. They don't abide by their own, statutes and codes. They just don't care. Because, look, they're making money. They're getting away with it. It's power and authority, and it's whatever they want to do. If they don't like it, it's very – look, there's nothing more dangerous than to fall into these courts, and ignorance is the worst problem. There's nothing more dangerous than ignorance.
Yeah, that's my concern, is that I'm not as educated as I need to be, although I am working on it.
Even with an education, it's an uphill battle, and there's no guarantee you're going to be able to win. But
I'm pretty much going to have to go into hiding. How can I even be a committeeman if I'm having to avoid police officers? And because they want to throw me in jail. I mean, they've already done it, and they took a child away from me that isn't even mine. And they're accusing me of child neglect for a child that isn't even mine.
Mm. Well, this is why we're doing what we're doing. And this is why we don't care about losing the battles. We've lost lots of battles. We've won occasionally a battle here and there. We don't care about losing the battle. We want to win the war. And the war is where we're at right now. And let me tell you something, the silence that we are getting and have been getting from the United States Supreme Court for over 2 years, and actually go further back than that, I think 3 to 3.5 years, they have been silent. They have not responded to anything. And
How do we go from that point where they're being acquiescent with us to stopping all unlawful activity?
Well, it starts with taking back the court, and it starts with taking back the federal court, because that's where the control and the duty of that court is to protect, the unalienable rights of the people. I mean, they don't really have authority to hear any cases over people unless it's concerning a constitutional violation, So that's we have to take it back, and that's what our plan is, to try to take this court back. We can take it back, and we're very close to it, and there's a number of things going on. We're taking advantage of their silence, we know that we got them feared. They're fearing us. We know that for many different reasons, and we even get reports of things happening here or there from time to time, and, of course, our own experiences. And I mentioned earlier, when you go into a court, and if that court keeps going on and on and on and on, and they never get to a solution where normally, in one or two hearings it's done and over with, you move on, when they keep going on, that means they know they're guilty of something. And we need to take advantage of that. And then you have to find a way to put them onto the offense. And every time you go into the court, they have to be on the offense and you have to be on the defense. If it's the other way around, you're losing. That's how you know whether you're winning or losing. But that doesn't mean you're going to win in the end, because they're really looking to get you to the place to really understand what you really know and how much damage could you possibly do to that person, being the judge, that is. Their whole business is status quo, and they got a problem on the other end. If they don't maintain the status quo, they got a problem because they got to answer to someone else, so to speak. Yeah. And that's really where the problem is. We are a captured nation. We have been captured and controlled for a very long time, probably my entire lifetime. We know that this took place when they merged law and equity together and called it civil. Okay, that took place in 1938, And
just after the 1933 gold being taken from us.
Oh yeah, there is a we go through a list of things that have happened that have led up to this thing going all the way back to 1776, and we've listed it all out. We're going to be talking about that next week, and you know, but that's where we're at. But again, they have a fear of the people. When we've had court cases where, you know, they beat the heck out of us here and there, and you try to move it this way, and they'll continue the case on because they know you're right. And they're trying to figure a way to get out of there and make a solution without being in jeopardy themselves, okay? But we've had cases where we've had people, lots of people, come into the courtroom, and that puts a fear of the people into them, and all of a sudden they put on a show. They're still not going to give you away. They're looking for the time to do what they can in the dark, because that's how they work. They work in the dark. And they'll have hearings and make decisions, you know, and just do paper and try to keep you out of the court or whatever. This is the problem we have to beat. But again, we have to realize we got a large membership. We're putting out a lot of papers. We served it on everywhere in government almost. We're getting it out to as many news medias as we can. People need to get the word out themselves. We need to build up, get to that critical mass, okay? And we're going right into the lion's den, okay? We're going right to the people who are responsible for all of this, and I don't care how many guns they got to their head. It doesn't matter. They need to do the right thing. They shouldn't have taken those positions if they're not ready, because they know along the road that they're going to be under that kind of a situation. I mean, it's all over the place, the corruption everywhere. But the we're going into the lion's den or the hornet's nest, whatever you want to call it, and that is the United States Supreme Court, okay? They are the responsible ones. They have been given the job to oversee all the federal district courts. They are the final conclusion of what takes place. They have the power and the authority to write, commands down to writs of mandamuses, a command down to all of the federal district courts saying, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, stop this, or whatever. They do nothing. They do nothing. And Congress, they should be removing these people out of office, but they don't even know the Constitution. And most of them are lawyers. I think like 60 or 70% of them up there are lawyers, and yet they really have no clue what the Constitution says. They don't honor their oaths. Even the parts they do understand, they don't honor. We have a serious problem. But we also have another thing happening, okay? And that is that the deep state is being taken out, and it's not going to be long before Trump finally finishes off with them. And once that's done, they have no more protection. There is nobody to protect these people no more. You see, they didn't get the memo yet. They don't think that they're losing yet, because they really don't see it yet. Anybody following the news, the real news, like through X-22 report or Black Conservative Patriot program that I listen to, and there's a few others. I mean, that's the real insight of what's really going on. We're getting even, military intelligence revealing certain things to the patriots, to the people, to let them know what's going on behind the scenes. And don't worry about this. It looks like they won, but don't worry about that because, there's other things happening, and this is what's happening. Sometimes they'll give us some information, and a lot of times they don't on what's going to happen in the future, but they do alert us and because they don't want the enemy to know what their moves are. But the bottom line is we are winning, and they are being taken down. But that's not getting up to these people yet. These people in the courts, they still think they got protection. They still think that they got a place where they can hide. But they always do look to a place to hang their hat before they make a decision. But nevertheless, the day is going to come, and I don't think it's far off. And that's why our timing of what we're doing is right. And the papers we're going to file in the next 2 weeks, we've got two papers going out, probably two this week. And the timing couldn't be more perfect. And so really all we need to really, just solidify this whole thing is the critical mass. We need the people to step up, become educated, get behind us, and let it know you guys need to obey the law or resign, because we're going to indict.
out.
And that's
because
what we're going to do. We're going to indict. We have some indictments going down this week.
Okay.
And we've already indicted, to goodness. I should go take a count on how many federal district judges we've indicted. We've indicted quite a few of them. I think 30
or 40. That's part of the process, right, that we're already, like I'm already involved with. Like, that's part of my process, right, after the amicus curiae, then another step happens.
Yeah,
and another
step. The end results, if they don't do the obedient thing and they don't do the lawful thing, we're going to give them every opportunity. We're going to use the court to do it. We're going to give them every opportunity. And when they continue to break that law, we're going to indict these people.
All right.
Yes.
I'm working on it.
The grand jury has already decided that every person that sticks their toe in the door, their fingers into the case, tries to, you know, erase our case, remove our case, destroy our case, conceal our case, do any of those things, whether they're clerks or judges, doesn't matter, any officers of the court, an indictment is there for them.
Good, because I've had clerks and judges actually ignore my writ of habeas corpus. I've had them file them as, and this is in another case that we're going to be doing a joinder for, they have filed that, like I sent in the writ of habeas corpus, they filed it as a letter from me and
yes,
ignored it.
Yes, we've had that done too, yeah.
Yep.
And that proves conspiracy, by the way. Okay?
Yeah, I'm tired of them. They
have
a grave
accusation. I'm sorry,
yeah, say that again.
Oh, that's a game or a plan that they already have. It's all across the nation. All these courts, they do the same things. And what's mm-hmm. interesting is when they don't know what to do, okay, you know they're getting together to figure out something to do. Then they make a plan. Then they come up with a way to try to, you know, deal with that problem.
Yeah,
and then they
all do it. I went to Oklahoma, and I was trying to put in an affidavit of truth in one of the courts there. And they refused it. They gave me a letter and everything, said they were refusing it. I had to go through a process of a bunch of different paperwork they wanted me to file and make a bunch of fees that I needed to pay, and then they would accept my papers. And I was like, that's not how the process works here.
Yeah, they don't end. They don't stop. It may be worse for us than it was for our founding fathers, although with our founding fathers, I mean, the evil that they would do and the tortures that they would do. But look at, even in our prisons, if you don't think people are being tortured, then they're very naive, especially anybody that's in the political side of things. People are who have a right to do what they're doing and being punished for it, and they're fighting back, and those people are being tortured. And we covered that in one of our papers. We laid out the different things that they do. I think it's called diesel therapy or something is one of the things that they do, which is really just putting a prisoner in a vehicle and keeping them moving around all over the place from place to place, and they're living in a vehicle that just constantly keeps moving, okay? And they do that with political prisoners, okay? And eventually they get to a place where they have hearings and stuff, but that is part of the punishment. Locking someone down in a cell and chaining them to the floor, and they can't even reach the toilet. I mean, all yeah. kinds of things. Or in cold cells, no blankets, no pillows. It just goes on and on and on. And some of the things they've done with the Bundys, with the beatdowns and different things that happened up there in Oregon, okay, it's pretty bad. And the people who don't know about it, they will find out one day, because everybody will get stuck in a problem here or a problem there. So, and they'll try to fight back, maybe. It's only the people who don't fight back at all and just submit and give them their money and, you know, and just totally submit, okay? Yeah. Then of course, you know, eventually even they may be caught up in things. Because if the iron boot ever comes down, you know, because really this nation's being moved into socialism, and, of course, that's what we're fighting against. And we've been fighting that since I was a kid, I remember, way back when. But nevertheless, you know, that's the battle. You know, if Hillary Clinton had gotten into office, I do think we probably would have been over by now. And then everybody would know how bad it is, because the iron boot would come down, and we'd be living in just fear of government, total 100% fear of government. with being unable to do anything about it. I think we would have been in a revolution. There'd be some fighting, and they, of course, would call the Patriots, which they do already, terrorists. They've been building that up for years, making sure that people see the Patriots as terrorists. You know, I remember seeing something on some I'm trying to think what it was, some programs on TV or something, cop show or something, and they were investigating some political group. And they used the words the founding fathers, okay? And they twisted the whole meaning of that, the founding fathers meaning the founding fathers of some you know, the ideas of whatever these people were pushing forward, which, of course, was real terrorism. But they're trying to make the patriots, they call them patriots, they're trying to connect that word patriot and the word founding fathers with terrorists, you know?
Yes.
Veterans with terrorists. And it goes on, and that's been going on for quite some time. But again, the times, they are changing, and the tables are turned, and I see victory not far away.
Well, I thank you for that, because I have been beat down by this system of courts in New York since 2011, when they took my daughters from me through divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And I really would like to.
And that's the biggest sin that they commit against we the people, is taking our children. You can't create a bigger sin than that. And I'll tell you what, all these judges and all these family courts, they should go to jail for a long time. All of them. I can't think of any of them. They're just evil SOBs.
Yes.
Absolutely. But until we can bring back justice in the courts, because we have to do it lawfully, and we have that opportunity to do this lawfully, we have a wedge in the court. We have fear moving through the process, fear of them seeing justice is coming. And with what Trump is doing and the deep state being taken down, the swamp being drained, at some point they're going to get the memo and they're going to realize they got a problem, and they're going to either go hide under a rock or leave town.
Yeah, and I think that's great, because I've actually had the opportunity in this last week to just take all of those things that I've been learning through National Liberty Alliance and through my own studies, and I was able to tell these lawyers, you know what, you don't get to claim immunity. Anytime that you have represented me, you're going to have to answer. And it's going to happen. I let them know that I was joindered and that I was going to be getting an amicus curiae filed on my behalf, and that they were going to have to answer for the wrongdoing that they've committed against me. And it gave me great pleasure to let them know that basically we were on their tails.
Yeah, they think they're above the law. They think they have a sovereign immunity. Because they're acting in the courts, and they could do anything. They don't understand that once they break the law, the code, you know, the Constitution, they violate their oath, that immunity is gone. You know, that's there for only mistakes and, you know, misunderstandings and things that anybody can appreciate could happen, but it should be rare. But again, look, if the people were judging the people the way it belongs, we wouldn't have any problems, and then we would then put the screws down to these people that are in office that make sure they do their jobs. Or A, we're going to recall them, but we have to have the people with the power and the authority to do the recalling. People have to get involved, or we can indict them, so people have to be involved in the administrative process of the juries and answer to the call of the juries and listen to what's going on and make a serious decision, and let's end this whole thing. In any event.
I
got to move on to the next caller, though. You got a final statement?
Yeah, I think that's why I want to become a committeeman, is because I see the value of being able to say, hey, you didn't keep your oath, now get out.
Right. We're going to start teaching. That's going to be in the course, okay? It's also going to be in the book. And we're going to start teaching and talking about that over the fall, because we want to be prepared for next year, because next year is the year that the committee men run all across this nation. They run on even years. And although there are some that run on odd years, and we're going to teach people how to run on an even year for those who run on an odd year, because they can't really run on an odd year. That's just an oscillation thing. They always, what they do is they oscillate the power, okay? half of them come out during the even year, and half of them stay in to maintain to hold the power for the new people coming in, and then the other half, when they go out, then the other half stays in power and holds the power so they can control the new people coming in, and they don't know the process or how things work until they get in there and they explain it to them how it works, and of course it's all a lie, and it's nothing about control. And the committee men that go in to these things after a couple of years get so frustrated, they leave. Some of them, you know, they're criminals themselves, and they use the process to get power and on. But, yeah, we need to take this over. And we're going to start training and talking about that, like I said, over the probably in the fall or just after the fall, but before next year, because we need to run. We need people running all over this nation. We need a bear to accomplish our goal. We need to do a couple of things. Number one, we have to take back the federal courts. Meanwhile, we need to position ourselves in the political places that we need to be lawfully, lawfully elected committeemen that will not be acknowledged until the federal court takes control over that and makes it happen, because there'll be lots of cases, and we only have to make a ruling on a couple of cases in those courts to bring back the fact that people who are elected control the committeemen process, not people who are appointed or self-appointed, because that's what they all are. And there is a lawful way to become elected to take these positions. And when people are empowered to that, we only need 5 people in every state to be empowered to do that, to take that. But we would desire 5 people in every county. Okay, that's the real desire. And at some point, we need to get to that. But we also have a plan on how to build up the ranks inside the committeeman process. And I think any small group of people who take back the power and the authority and bring the law back into the process and the requirement of people to know the Constitution before they run for office, okay, and to let them know that if you break the law and you violate your oath, we're going to let you know real quick, and if it's a simple thing, you know, maybe we can just correct the problem. If it's serious, we're going to take you out because we want to recall you. We got the power. We got the authority to recall. We will take you out of office. And if it's a criminal activity connected to that, well, the grand jury over there is going to indict you. You see, this is how consent of government comes. This is the power and the authority of the people. This is the way this nation was set up. There are two points of control that we have. The control of the judicial process, that is the law, okay? The equity belongs to them, okay? And I think that's running pretty reasonably okay. But we control, without the corruption, of course, but we control the law and we control the political process. But right now, they control it. The powers that be, whoever they may be, they control the political process and they control the judicial process.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take our next caller. Thanks. Okay, 757 area code, it looks like. Jeff, you got the mic. Jeff, go right. And by the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. Jeff, how you doing, Jeff?
Good, good, John. How are you? Hey, you know, there's a woman on earlier that was talking about an insurance claim. I came on late. I didn't really catch much of it, but she was talking about subrogation and appraisals and issues that, you know, this is my expertise. If there's anything I can help her with, I would love to help her. I just, in case she's listening, I've been an insurance broker.
We can connect you with her. She comes on often, and we talk behind the scenes sometimes. And we can connect you, if you want her phone number, we can pass her phone number to you. I'm sure she'll be happy to talk to you. Just let her know that you're you know, with National Liberty Alliance, and that you're a member for quite some time with us.
Yeah, I mean, I would love that opportunity. I don't know what I can do for her, but she was talking my language. She was talking things that, you know, I certainly am knowledgeable about, and I'm concerned that, you know, she's being screwed over. So I would love to talk to her.
Well, maybe you can both enhance each other, you know, because she does have a lot of knowledge of the administrative parts of things.
Okay.
So.
Well, yes, please. Please, if you would, share her information or...
Yeah, Jen, can you make sure, maybe drop to Jeff or his, let me see, I don't know if she's still on right now. Let me take a quick look. Oh, I can't. With this board, I can't tell. It takes. You have to go from page to page to page to scroll through, and this is really bad. We're looking for a new platform because we got forced into this new conference call HD.com platform, which is horrible.
Oh, really?
I'm confused all the time here. But yeah, Jen, pass Jeff Crystal's number, and I know that Crystal, she'd like to talk with him. Okay?
Okay. Yep.
All right.
Anything,
thank
Jeff?
You.
What else we got?
That's it. I mean, Jan and I are communicating tonight. I guess I'm going to be doing some more mailings, and you know that's awesome. We got to get this stuff done.
Yep. We got a lot of mailings going. And we're going to have a lot of mailings coming, lots of them, okay? And we're looking out for the people to help us to file these papers. And again, you know, it's really kind of serving the papers on the mass within the government. I mean, the important ones where people actually have to be served, I'm doing those. But to file all 94 federal district courts, and as a matter of fact, maybe we didn't make a mistake by filing that paper with, because we did it with certification. When we filed the U.S. attorney on behalf of all 94 federal district courts, so we filed it with them, and then, of course, we served them through that U.S. attorney, and then we served the United States Supreme Court directly. But then we got other papers going out that's all been served, too, because Jan's been getting receipts, which has the tracing of all of these priority envelopes going out. So
yes.
All of that is a regular service. Now that they've been served, you know, a lot of these papers, we could just put stamps on them and send them out to most of them, but we'll still continue to certify the important ones. Maybe there's about 8 or 10 of them we do.
John, the only thing that I would really, if I have any way of encouraging you to change our approach, is that please let's provide some kind of a cover page, something, you know, that makes it clear as to why we are sending documents that are entitled or shown, indicating that they're for only specifically the Northern District of Albany, you know, and we're sending them across the country. Why can't we give some reason?
When we list the defendant, we list the federal judiciary, which means all 94 federal district courts, and it means also the appellate court, and you might even be able to say that it also includes the Supreme Court, but we literally name the United States Supreme Court and the judiciary.
Yes, 100%, that's correct. However, I believe the issue is that, you know, when you're serving legal papers, if they're not directed toward a certain party, then that, you know, then no one...
I'll tell you what. You know, I kind of agree with you. I thought about doing cover pages and letters, a letter to cover on top of it for certain groups, but we'd have to do different ones for different people. And if you want to assist us with that, you know, we can meet and give you more details. You can ask me questions on how we're doing things and what the idea is, and, you know, whatever you need to be able to sit down and maybe create a paper for this group or create a cover paper for that group and so on. If you want to do that, we'll connect for that purpose.
Yeah, please. I beg of you, actually.
Well,
yeah,
get to the next meeting that Fran has, and, you know, we'll call it some kind of a committee, and if I know you're going to be there, because I don't usually go to that, I haven't gone to that meeting. I know they had two meetings. I was at partial part of it. But, you know, I let all the other people work the other, you know, things going on in National Liberty Alliance. But if I know you're going to be there, then I'll be there for that meeting. And we'll try to address it maybe in the beginning so we can get into the details. But try to formulate some idea and a plan and questions you might ask me so that we can try to figure this out.
Absolutely. Hey, is it all right for me to, and this is really directed to Jan, can I call you? Can you and I talk directly, or is email the only option?
Jan?
Maybe he's not listening, but... I mean,
no, he's muted,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you can call me. Just look up my number on the directory page.
Okay. Yeah, he's on the top of the directory page, so...
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Thank you, folks. I yield. Have a great night. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Okay, we're going to take our next call. By the way, we only got two people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queues, now's the time to do it. So star six and I think a one to get into the queue. We're going to take our next caller, and that is Drew from Pennsylvania. Go right ahead, Drew. Drew from Pennsylvania, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Maybe Drew's away from the phone. We only have one other caller in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into that queue, star six and a one. Last call for Drew. Drew from Pennsylvania. Okay, we're going to take our last caller here. Hopefully someone else will get into the queue. But it's a 757 area code number. You got the mic. What's your first name and your state?
Yes, Kim, Virginia.
How you doing, Kim from Virginia?
I'm fine. I hear you got a lot of 757s on the call tonight. But I just wanted to make two statements. My first statement was for the young lady who got pulled over with the commercial trucking licenses. There's a national driver registry that states have become a party to. And if they are party to the net, it's called NDR. National Drivers Registry, then they're not allowed to give a vehicle from out of that state a ticket. They could give them a warning, but they're not supposed to give them a ticket.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's real big. I had gotten into this thing about the driver's license because I was pulled over. This is my second statement I want to make.
Can you email us information on that? Maybe some places where we can go and study and learn a little bit on that?
Yeah, it's the National Drivers Registry. It's new. It's been around for about 24 months.
National Drivers Registry. Okay.
NDR. Mm-hmm. You can opt out of it. It's a lot of things that you can do. You can opt out of it, or if you're in one state, the states agree that if you drive through that state and you get pulled over, they're not supposed to give you a ticket because they're participating in the registry.
Well, let me ask you a question. In a situation like that, and the person, the truck driver or whoever tells the officer, hey, you know, you can't do this because of that, and the officer has no clue what you're talking about, then the proper thing, I think, I guess, is to take the ticket and then mail in your position with that ticket to
exactly.
Wherever the ticket came from.
Yes. Yes, that is what I do. I frequent Illinois a lot, and I've got a couple parking tickets. And what I do is I write on the envelope of the parking ticket out of state and send it in, and I may call in maybe 2 or 3 months later, and there's no record of the ticket. So
that's great.
I
got to check this out. And you became educated over this at the NDR.com or NationalDriversRegistry.com?
Yep. And you can call them and they'll talk to you and they'll tell you if your name is in the registry, if it's not, if your license plate is in the registry, if it's not, they'll tell you all that. They're very open
good.
With it. Yeah. And
all
it's
right,
called
well,
the National Drivers Registry.
Hopefully that truck driver is listening in and can follow up. But sure, I'm going to look into this a little bit, and we'll post some information up on our website on this. So.
Right. And the second thing was about the driver's license. I was pulled over because my tags were out, and I'm also a veteran, so I had some things going on with my license. I had been pulled over before, and I had to get some medical things. To make a long story short, I had to get some medical documents. And when I went before the judge, you know, he said, you need to do this, this, and this. And I didn't have an opportunity to do it. So they told me, the DMV told me to bring in my license or do ABCD. So I took them my license back. So when I went before the judge again, when he was getting ready to make the decision, like 30 days later or whatever, I said, well, I don't have any license. I'm not licensed. And he said, well, what do you mean you're not licensed? I said, I'm not licensed. They took their license back. They wanted me to bring them in, and I took them in. So he had one of the sheriffs go and verify that I wasn't licensed. So the sheriff came back and said, well, she's not licensed. He said, well, is her license suspended? He said, the sheriff said, no, she's not licensed. He said, well, did her license expire? The sheriff said, no, the state.
Well, he was looking for everybody to get you.
Right. He said the comment on the computer said not licensed, which I had already knew, and that's what I told him. So he stands up and he throws his papers up. He says, well, I don't have anything to charge the ticket to. So I started thinking, I was like, he don't have anything to charge the ticket to. So I said, it might be a good thing not to have license. So he says,
you got to be careful with that. I'll tell you why. I think you got away with that because at the time when they gave you the ticket, you had a license. But now you're in the court and you don't have a license. He's got a dilemma. He's not sure how to deal with that problem. You see, but if you never had a license, they would have ticketed you for driving without a license, and then you'd have to, he knows how to deal with that.
Okay.
So,
you
got to be careful.
Okay, well, that may be the case. I'm not really sure, but.
Can you go back? Let me ask you a question. This is kind of interesting. Can you go back and get your license back?
Yes, I can go back and get my license back, but hold on.
But if the court, you went to the court, did the court dismiss you?
They dismissed the charges.
Okay, so now if you go back and want your license back, you just have to pay the necessary fees, and that's it? I mean, you shouldn't have to take a test or anything.
There's no fees. I guess I would just have to start over again like I've never had a license before.
What state are you in?
I'm in Virginia.
Virginia. Okay. You should go check that out because they may allow you for your license. Like, if your license expires, okay, and then a month or 2 months later you go to get it, taken care of, the only thing they get you for is they want you, I think, to turn in your plates, and they'll hit you for a fine for every day that you're driving. Your car's still insured, so they wouldn't do that either. If your license expires and you go down, they're not going to make you go through a road test and all that if you've had a record on file before with license and it was just recently taken out,
Well, that's the thing. I'm not really sure, and that's what I was getting ready to say to you. I went to court for something else, and the license issue came up again, and the judge said, are you licensed? And I said, no, I'm not licensed. And he said, well, he asked me, it was for a bill, and he asked him, well, what is it that you want me to do? She's not licensed. And the judge dismissed the case. So I don't know what's really going on.
Well, remember, you got a judge that may not be too creative. You'll get a lot of creative judges out there. They'll create something. So, but I hear you. That's interesting. But I'd be careful.
I thought it was interesting too, and that's why I started doing a lot of research about the license. But
Okay, I'm definitely going to check that out. You got anything else?
No, that's it. Thanks for
speaking,
and I yield my time.
All right, thanks for the info. Okay, let's go to the next caller here. Let's see if I can find the button. Okay, we got Cynthia. How you doing, Cynthia? You got the mic.
I'm good, John. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I just have a question. Actually, a couple of issues, but primarily looking at page 18 of, you outlined how all the different things that happened in history that got us to this disastrous situation today. And so on page 18, and this was like, wow, I really want to just explore this a little bit with you. The number 495, the International Organization Immunities Act, enacted in 1945, relinquished every public office of the United States to the United Nations and mm-hmm. established a special group of foreign or international organizations whose members could work in the U.S. and enjoy certain exemptions from U.S. taxes and search and seizure laws. So how I'm reading this is that there's really no de jure public office. They're all under the U.N. Is that what this is saying?
Well, that's where they've been moving us. Look at John Kerry already signed, without the permission of the Senate, signed an agreement with the United Nations concerning gun control in the United States. Now, again, you got to understand what these people do. They get all these things, like do these illegal things. If you go and study, and because there's information, for instance, out there on how they got, for instance, the 16th Amendment through and the 17th Amendment, neither of them were ratified. They were never agreed upon, even in Congress. The vote was nil almost because, you know, in one case, they went to count the vote, and it was overwhelmingly one way, but they just said it was the other way. And they didn't care what anyone said. They just moved it on and put the record, and they went on. Why? How did they get away with that? And you were talking about going back to 1913, 1914, early on, okay, or 12. And how did they get away with that? Well, they've had guns to people's heads. The deep state has been around for a long time, and every year they get stronger and stronger and stronger. Mm-hmm. And every time they put more laws onto the and even if they put laws onto the books that they don't utilize, they let them ferment there, and they get people to forget certain things in here, and the next thing you know, they're applying those acts and laws that they've put in there.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a very sneaky thing. It's over.
Yeah, I mean, is this like really, really, like we can really work with this statement if this is actually really true? I mean,
absolutely.
We don't have to go to any of these courts or anything because they're not our courts.
No,
UN people.
Remember, you know, there's nothing more dangerous than ignorant inaction. They're not going to listen to that. They're not going to believe that. They don't care about that. You see, look, they have constructed a statutory prison, okay? And they've exercised on us everything they can at this point. And you know, and the water gets hotter and hotter and hotter, you know? And then little by little, they bring out the new things. And they if you look at your freedoms, you can see them being eroded. Mm-hmm. So they do it very slowly, okay?
Right.
I mean, people don't even realize how much they have lost. They have no clue. Let them get into a court.
Oh, I know.
They have no right.
Well, a lot of us on these calls, I mean, I'm like getting traumatized listening to some of the horrors that some of these people are going through, you know, Americans, and, you know. But, I mean, that kind of, this statement kind of makes sense because, you know, the Supreme Court came up with all these immunities against, you know, like the judges can do whatever they want to do.
Well,
you know, they have all these immunities.
So the United States the United States Supreme Court over the years have neutralized some of that, but they ignore it, okay? But nevertheless, we can bring it up. You know, and they made clear judges can be sued. Judges can be in prison. They can be held for criminal crimes. Yet their immunity fails the moment they break their oath. As soon as they break their oath, that's when the immunity, they no longer have immunity. It's done. It's gone. Finished. You can be held accountable. That's why they wrote in U.S. 18 and U.S., you know, those codes in there or statutes that help us, U.S.C. 18 and 42, one's on the civil side, one's on the criminal side. And I think that's the, you know, sort of the good guys being able to get some good stuff in there. But let me tell you, there's been a war in Congress, you know, for a long, long time. And really, they've been seized. We're an oligarchy. People don't realize this. Our president, since at least Kennedy, has been controlled by behind the scenes, but the powers that be, whoever they are, ultimately the elite, but they're controlled, and they maintain the control of Congress and everything else, and they execute all of their power and authority through the deep state. They've controlled the CIA, the FBI, the all of these different agencies, okay? And so they put everybody in a box, and they got a gun on everyone's head. I mean, and this battle's been going on for a long time, and Trump has broken the whole thing. You know, he's upset the whole cart. And he just happens to be the right guy at the right time with the right knowledge and the ability and just the right attitude and everything else to deal with these people. And, of course, he's not alone. Bear in mind, if he was alone, he'd be dead by now. You know, he's got military behind him. That's the key here. And the interesting thing I understand about military intelligence, they got access to all intelligence throughout the United States, everything. Whatever goes through CIA or anything, they got intelligence everywhere. So they get it all. And not, I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've heard. I understand that to be true. So that's interesting. And with the military behind him, I also heard a story. And again, I don't know how true this is either, but it's come from good sources, people I have trust for, that there was a plan to do a coup against Obama. And they didn't see it as a coup. They saw it as taking back the country to bring it back to the people. But they realized that it would be a problem because the people wouldn't understand what was going on, and no one would know who the enemy is. You know, I mean, the last thing we want is military to take over control of our nation. Are they going to give it back? Will we ever get it back? You know, are they doing it for good reasons or bad reasons? So the only way it could be done is lawfully. And that's why what we're doing on our end is totally 100% lawfully. We're exercising the law. We're exercising, you know, what has been done in the past. We have history behind us. And we're just putting it all together. And it is clear as a bell. We the people, have every right and every authority to fire these people. If the government gets that, it's right in the Declaration of Independence, you know. And we have the power and the authority to fire these people and bring on new gods, get rid of them, okay? But, we, you know, we're doing what we're doing to be met up at a time when Trump comes in, and Trump, because we've been doing this before Trump came in, we didn't know how we were going to end up and how it was going to work. We knew the deep state and all this, you know, how are we going to go up against that? We just trusted in God, really. But once Trump came in and we started to see what he's doing and realized that he's for the people, we realized we are right on the right timing because, you know, they're taking out the deep state and we're filing papers concerning the very same issue. We're bringing it to the surface. We're putting it into a legal battle, a lawful battle. We're laying it out on the paper, on the stone, right there, and placing it right in their court. So it's very exciting, you know.
Yes. Well, that was really, I mean, I've heard so many things along the way. When I read that, I said, wow, that's really, you know.
Wait till you hear the next paper. An 8-page paper that's dynamic.
Oh, yes. And that's my other question. You mentioned how they merged law and equity. Okay, I get that. But they also threw in Admiralty Maritime. They meshed that all in there. And so when you're going into these, you're actually, particularly with these fake mortgage stuff going on, you're actually, you know, these jurisdictions unknown, it's actually like Admiralty Maritime.
No,
you know,
it's jurisdictions unknown.
Because that's what the Federal Reserve is, huh?
It's jurisdictions unknown because they've created a process that we can't even understand and doesn't even harmonize on paper. It doesn't even harmonize. And, you know, law is constructive, okay? It's the construction of law. You look at and you study and you construct and you come down to your conclusions, construction of law. Right. And when, you know, they do these things, you go into USC 18, for instance, and you go look up the jurisdiction, and it says that it's maritime, and it's maritime law, okay? And so it's the law of the sea. It has nothing to do with we the people, okay?
Well,
and you find
we don't realize that when we go in there and they do some little fancy footwork, and that's, you know, you're entrapped. It's all about seizure and entrapment, and they're all making tons of, you know, credit.
So they have the penal code in USC 18. They merged, they say they merged equity with law. They call law precedence, okay? That's what they call law. That's the way they get away with natural law, because they can't talk about natural law. They, God forbid, they talk about God, you know? So they can't talk about that. And you see, you know, they've been trying to destroy God in the minds of Americans for a long, long time. And, you know, I was born in the 50s, and I'm telling you, back in the 50s is when I became conscious of it when, you know, maybe in the early 60s. I was very young, but I became conscious. I heard the conversations with adults. I've seen things on TV, you know, a little thing here or there. This battle's been going on, and I was raised a Christian. And so the battle to destroy God was on and running. I mean, they came up with Xmas that back in those days. I don't know if it was before that time, but I had never heard of it. But that was the debate and argument, you know, Xmas instead of Christmas. They took Christ out of Christmas, you know. And so they've been working at this for a very long time. And a lot of people have fallen prey to this. And that's a real shame, because then they're prime meat for socialism. They think man is the answer. In with, and they get them by giving them all these free gifts, you know, give me an Obama phone, you know, give me all this money, give me free schooling, give me your food stamps, give me this, give me that. It's just being fed, and all the payola on the higher end, everybody's making money. All that disappears once they finally, you know, close the loop, the noose on this thing. It's all going to go away. They're not going to get pennies. They're going to become just like us, and they'll probably kill most of them, because they'll figure they can't be trusted. They became useful idiots. They went up against their own. But nevertheless, the people who are struggling, it's rare. We don't find many of that here at National Liberty Alliance. But once in a while, especially in the past, we had people upset because we talked about God or we read the Bible in the beginning or whatever, those kind of things. And they don't understand that you either have unalienable rights, and that requires God, a creator of some kind. However you understand that God, that's fine, you know. If we want to talk personally, maybe we'll be able to share the gospel with you. But nevertheless, however you understand God, that's good. And if you're an atheist, if you really are an atheist and you'd like to have unalienable rights and you're willing to live under this, well, fine, you can join us too.
Right.
But the bottom line is they've been poisoned so much and they get so upset and they don't like God in the thing. But you can't have unalienable rights without a God. The only thing you have left is back to where they're trying to move it, and that is to have civil rights, 14th Amendment, civil rights. We give it to them, we can take it away.
And we can't have, we should, regardless of whatever the money situation is, but, you know, having this, creating this imaginary money and then having to pay back by interest, I mean, this is how we're losing and, you know, we're getting robbed and, you know, with this imaginary debt, you know, that we can never pay
off.
Look
at this.
And that's
again,
how, you know, and we end up getting pledged. Our labor, our property, everything's getting pledged to subsidize this outrageous debt that we really don't have and should be gotten rid of.
Yeah, well, that with that
quite frankly,
construction of war. They got the Federal Reserve Act. They got the 16th Amendment out there. They now brought back its debtor's prison. They have an interesting way. The way they do, you get you into the debtor's prison. And who's the debtor? Who's the debtor and who's getting paid? Well, it's foreign bankers. It's not even the American people. It's not even the government. It's foreign bankers.
It's the same commercial merchant mindset back in the slavery days when they took human beings and collateralized them, you know, to pay debt. It's the same concept, but it's all
and
on paper now.
Ignorant. You got to keep them ignorant. No, you got to keep the slave ignorant. Look at Jefferson trying to free his slaves, and we read we did a paper on Jefferson not long ago, and we posted it and we read it. You know, Jefferson was fighting in his early 20s. As soon as he became politically connected, you know, he went to the legislature. His first political act was to try to do some slavery. All the way through everything he'd done, who's always had a focus of getting rid of slavery. He said that was the curse. And yet that's the man they say he's a quandary. He's a contradiction. You know, he says we should get rid of slavery, and yet he says all men are created equal. That's a contradiction. What's wrong with that guy? He's not a Christian. He even says so. All of this is untrue, you know. The people believe fake history, fake news, fake history, you know. But all
I'm really
of this
glad that the,
people, but
I'm
let's
glad
just,
the people
let me get to this point, though. Jefferson said concerning the slaves that he, you know, he didn't even know what to do with them. He couldn't just cast them out, okay? He couldn't just free them. He says it's like abandoning a child in a marketplace, just taking a child, an eight-year-old, and just leaving them in the market and just going away, just abandoning them. That's what he felt like. And he felt so, he felt that he owed his slaves so much, but it was against the law to let them to learn. They couldn't, they didn't read, they didn't write. It was against the law to let, to teach them to read and write. He couldn't even do it. And it was a problem. You know, it was a problem. But that's where we are today.
Yes.
I want to tell you, that's where we are today. The American people are like little children. They do not know and understand the reality of what's really going on. And that is, therefore, it's the duty of those who have woken up, the duty of those who are waking up to what's going on and discovering, and especially connecting with or any other group that's doing something worthy, that they need to participate. They need to support that. Because if they don't, you know, their children are going to be slaves.
Well, that reminds me, because I'm in that context, I'm really glad that they didn't follow Judge Bork and say, oh, well, we might as well keep, because the slavery thing is so entrenched. I mean, we're in the same situation now. We're entrenched. More and more Americans are getting, losing their stuff.
Bork was a major problem for them.
Children. That mindset. I mean, you never accomplish anything. I mean, if you're going to, you know, keep things immoral and unlawful, you know, it's just going to get worse and worse. And so I do support what you're saying. Those whose eyes have woken up, you know, really need to, like,
now that you have a duty,
try
if
as
you,
much as they can.
You have a duty.
It is actually a duty, which brings to mind. I'm just thinking, you know, like how I can serve. You know, I'm doing little stuff here and there, but I'm really trying to figure out how I can fit into. In L.A., I've gone through, I lost all kind of crap. You know, I've been there. When people lose their homes, I know how, what happened. And speaking of which, a big area, I think, if, you know, when you get into issues, like you get into family court and you kind of understand what's going on there, and you've gone into these fake foreclosures and you've kind of touched on that and wrote papers on it, one big area that, you know, this country, this nation, not only individually, but even our own treasury is getting bled out, is through the USPTO office, the United States Patent and Trademark Office. And I've been learning a lot about it. It's taken me a long time to absorb it, but it makes a lot of sense. What they're doing, they're stealing not only property, they're also stealing our, through sophisticated processes, our intellectual property, our identities, our names, and it's funneling through automated processes through that office. And there's a history how it came to that point. It has a lot to do with the UCC and the UCC Revised 9, the Glass-Steagall, when they got rid of those protections. And so we're being, like, literally, in a lot of different ways, like human trafficked. Our signatures, our names, you know, getting through these mortgages, these fake mortgages, getting trafficked all around the world, making profits for everybody else, but the person who owns the signature, you know what I mean? And so I don't know. I mean, that's like a big, big issue. A lot of it is through, you go into,
but one of the things you need to understand, though, okay, when Trump becomes totally successful in what he's doing, and I do believe without any doubt in my mind or heart that he's going to become successful. There's no doubt about it, okay, in me. And but once he gets to that point and that happens, okay, remember, a couple of things. You know, what we're doing right now, and they know what we're doing because we file everything to Trump and also to the Attorney General. We were doing sessions, but now we're doing bar. They know everything we're doing. Mm-hmm. And but now, you know, we're bringing the light, okay, that darkness. We're shining the light on that darkness. You can't have half a truth. You can't have half a law. You can't have half a right. It's all or none. And you know what? For the hard things for them to swallow, and let me tell you, without really looking and understanding and thinking, you know, some of these things are hard. You know, people aren't mature enough for liberty to, so to speak, at least not in their mind. It's a mindset, but it starts with an education. You know, liberty isn't something you just come up, brought up and believing, because someone talks about being free and you understand the word free, you think you understand liberty? No, you haven't got a clue. When you start to read and look and understand what our founding fathers have discovered and what liberty really is and what this nation was built upon and the history and what common law is and how the structure and how things work, you know, you have to know these things. And of course, when we write our papers, we're not just writing them for the courts. We're writing them for the people. We're trying to educate the people in the government and anybody who's reading that paper to open their eyes, to waken them up, to realize what liberty really is and what true law is and the law that we the people ought to be under, which is natural law in courts of law, which is natural law, courts of justice, okay, where men don't the people get to decide. It is true, men and women come in, 12 of them, but we're the people. And we don't have any skin in the game. We're there for one purpose, you know, is to decide on that particular case. We have nothing to make us go this way or that way other than the truth. And with a sense of justice to bring, you know, some kind of a conclusion to the matter, to restore the injured party and fix the problem. So you see, when people start to see those things, okay, they got to work them out. But you can't have half a truth. You can't have half a law. You can't have half a right. It's all or none. And I think Trump realizes this. And I do think that Trump has grown. Well, there's no doubt that Trump has grown since he's gone in office. I think he's grown in lots of ways. And especially in the law, I think he had, like anyone else, a certain ignorance of the law. But I think he's got a lot better understanding of the law now. And if he's reading our papers, and I do believe he's reading our papers, he's getting an education, and he's got to understand only if the people take the courts back under their control can it happen. And again, it's hard for people to swallow that kind of a responsibility, but that's what we were all – that's the great experiment. That's the American experiment. The fact that the people are ruling themselves. We're a people of law. We control the government. And you know, we give them the power, we can take it away from them, you know. We can change
the... Well, we should put a lien on that office there. But, you know, the only reason I brought it up is that it's a big issue, and it's really, it's going into this whole murky black hole of sea piracy on the internet, you know what I mean? And so you'll never see this stuff. It just only takes people... I mean, I don't fully understand it, but I know enough to speak a little intelligently about it. But the reason I brought it up is as potentially something that NLA could learn more about on the side, you know, on some kind of committee, and maybe even because I know in October that office is going to is looking for public comments on AI. The concept of artificial intelligence, and it'll be nice to have like the people collectively, you know, comment on, you know, some.
Well,
of
that's a very dangerous thing here. This AI thing. I mean, it could only be if it's possible. If it's possible, okay. If there is possible, you know, artificial intelligence. I don't even know if that's really possible. There are people that are claiming it is, but if it's possible, it can only be pure evil. Because it has no morality. If
Of the things we've seen filed in there is horrifying. But pertaining to these home mortgages,
people have a conscience, okay? People have a conscience. God speaks about certain people where their conscience is seared, okay, like with an iron, seared, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you take someone that's a serial killer, you know, you could say that that person's conscience, no doubt, has been seared. Mm-hmm. They're really defective in some way. You know, they have no empathy, okay? So there's really no driver behind the wheel. It is just on, you know, on automatic. There's no real, you know, moral control over that. You see, right. The conscience is the expression, the real expression of the soul, because you see, and the conscience becomes more and more a moral person. They have more of a conscience. They have more of an empathy towards other people. They do the right thing, whether anyone's seeing it or not. They do the right thing. They mm-hmm. they work hard not to do the wrong thing. I mean, none of us are perfect, but you see, there is the big difference. Okay, and God speaks about that, warring the spirit against the flesh. Because the flesh, you know, babies, we're born as little babies, and we grow up, and we become whatever the environment molds us into being.
Right.
And all of a sudden we discover that maybe we can make our own decisions here, and then we go through adolescence, and hopefully, you know, the child is being brought up to be able to be appreciated by the parents that this is a time of adolescence. Let's means learning to be an adult. That's the time period from 13 or so to 18. And
unfortunately,
and so you have to get those freedoms. But the thing is that if that conscience isn't fed, okay, and it's not doesn't have the moral fiber to it, okay, it doesn't it's not unable to control the flesh. To hold back the fleshly desire, because we all have things we want to do. That I can't do that. It's wrong. I can't do it. See, we're battling against it. But you see, I don't know how AI can control itself. If it comes to a conclusion, it's going to execute whatever power and authority it's been given to be able to execute.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty scary. But again, I don't even know that AI is possible.
Well, whoever is creating this stuff, I mean, there's a lot of people running around who don't have a conscience, and so it's our duty to, you know, put limits on that stuff. You know,
well,
what
you
I mean?
Know, the other thing that I might want to say about AI is, again, it could be another conspiracy. Okay, this is just a guess. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I have any knowledge of any of this kind of thing, but I could see how it could possibly be done. You have something that's called. Artificial intelligence, and everybody thinks it's artificial intelligence, and it starts to go out of whack when in reality there's some people behind it, making AI do whatever it is that they want it to do. So, again, that could be part of the game, too. I just, maybe it's possible, but every time I think about it, and I watch a lot of science programs and people talking about these things, I just don't know how you can get a machine to get to intelligence. You know, just because a machine wins at playing chess doesn't mean it's got intelligence, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's really, 0101 when you get down to the bottom line, you know? And it's just a reaction of what it's been taught. And it can't, can it learn? Maybe that's what they mean, because it can learn more and build up on that. And I don't know where that could go.
There's so many different levels to it. The thing is, like, people don't want to be non-consensually experimented upon. So, you know, there's transhumanism group out there, and they feel we need some computer attachments to our brain to catch up with the AI computers. You know what I mean? So, I mean, there needs to be, like, informed consent and choice. You know, there's more people who don't even want to participate in that stuff than people who do, you know? I mean, so I'd rather rely on God,
In my opinion, the responsible thing is research and movement in AI should be unlawful. But that's not going to happen. You know, if you think on the way of all the experiments that were performed upon people that were in concentration camps back during World War II, and horrific things were done to people.
Right.
And if they got twins into a concentration camp, they would do a lot of experiments, because they'd have an A and a B side of things and see, what if we do this to this one and that. You know, the evil, most evil, horrible, horrific things were done to people in those camps. But out of that, they learned a lot, and there was an argument or a discussion concerning using the results of that to advance ourselves, and really the bottom line is it shouldn't be done, and that's where we need to stand on the moral side, because that'll only help to influence that again in the future.
Informed consent,
certain things we just shouldn't be touching.
Oh, yes, but here we are, and there's a lot of money, you know, around these things. But with respect to the mortgage industry, there's AI programs involved in that, and in terms of, like, reaping a lot of profits at the expense of the mortgagee, of course. But, mm-hmm. you know, there's AI programs involved in that. And I don't know, you know, maybe down the road, you know, there could be a committee to kind of look at that, because, I mean, the whole thing's unconstitutional, you know, because there's no informed consent, and, you know, it involves, like, human trafficking of persons. And
well, there's so many things wrong with the process. It's I don't even know where to begin. There's so much wrong. I mean,
well, you got these software engineers, and they, I don't know, something happened to their ethical chips or something, and they're creating these programs, and you got patent attorneys filing these things. I mean, they think they own this country, basically. They think they own property. They think they own us, basically. And so that's what it boils down to. And they feel entitled to file all kind of crap to enrich somebody else, but not the American people nor the Treasury. So anyway, that's my little spiel. But I just want to bring that up because that's, I don't know if that's like a side issue you guys want to kind of get into, or maybe write a position paper, you know.
Well, look, a lot of that's going to have to, when the, look, at Federal Reserve is going to be shut down. It's only a matter of time. I mean, if you want to bring this nation back, it's got to be.
You think
so? I believe that with all my heart and soul. There's no doubt. Look at what Trump is doing. The big problem that really moves this whole thing is the money, okay? It is the Federal Reserve, okay?
Right.
There's no doubt he's trying to shut it down. He's going to get rid of it. When you bring gold and silver back into the game, there you go. Mm. You're done. You're gone. Mm. And also, if you're going to obey the Constitution, government cannot give its authority out to some private organization to exercise an authority that was constitutionally, that they were vested with constitutionally. They can't do that, okay? You know, the government's got to coin the money, not some private bank or something.
I know,
okay?
I know.
And if you're going to put a dollar bill out there, if that's going to live, it's got to be backed by something. It's got to be a silver certificate, like Kennedy was trying to do. Okay? And it's got to be real. You know, it's got to be real. And it's got to be restricted. And there's got to be, you know, consequences, you know, if they overprint money. They can't do it, you know. Again, gold and silver is the safest way to go. But you can't come back to a free nation. You can't kill the head of the snake without taking out the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is the head of that snake, okay? It's worldwide control, and it's all done with money. You know, look at Trump is so brilliant when you really think about some of these things. These people have been spending money, spending money, spending money, printing, 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 spending, spending. And what have they been doing with it? They've been creating other oligarchies, creating democracies that turn into oligarchies. They create control in all these different countries and everything. And all of this stuff is all controlled. It's all by using the money system, the money process, okay, and building this up, okay? Take that out of the game and it's gone. But the bottom line is if you're going to return to law, you got to shut down the Federal Reserve. You can't have half a law. Either it's lawful or it's not, period. There is no – you can't compromise on law. Some things just are not compromisable, okay?
Yes.
And law is one of them. Morality is another one of them, and that's what we need to do. And so, there's no doubt. Fix this problem without getting rid of that and setting up a new system. And Trump knows that. But again, what Trump has done is he stopped giving money to all these countries. He's cut them off, okay? And he's also not allowing I don't want to say unlawful, but to some degree it is, but the trade system that takes place with all the tariffs they put upon us and we haven't put upon them. I mean, it just put more and more money out there. So what he's done, he's cut all that out. But he's spending money like crazy, too, because what's he doing? He's building up the infrastructure. He's moving business back into the country. He revamped the military. He got all these – so he's spending money in a good place, and he's just taking advantage of the fact that's what they were doing, because we're going to shut the system down anyway. And I really do believe he's going to leave them hanging, so to speak, because we're not responsible for that debt. That private corporation is responsible, and the world will go after that private corporation. The world will go after. But first, the world's got to be kind of brought to some kind of repair, you know. Got to bring the nations back to their senses and back to and get the people back involved to some degree. I mean, they don't have what we have, but if we can get them back to, you know, sensibility and America is back to the law, they're going to want to be like us. And who knows, maybe they'll adopt the constitutions just like us. Maybe the people will rise up.
Yeah.
Decide to be free there too, you know. And
well,
and,
speaking of which, in LA, because you guys are really hit.
1 minute left, so.
Do you have like a PR committee? Because it just seems like the membership should grow, you know,
it
with
should.
All of this, and it really the success it depends do. On the people, really, because we're really the energy, we're truly the money, actually.
Yeah, we do have people working on these things, and we do need more, you know, people involved with it. We have a welcoming committee, which is really trying to get out there and move the dead wood, you know, get it going and get rid of the lumps on the logs, so to speak. And but we need more people involved. We're always looking for more people. We have so many positions that we could fill and so many committees that we can create. We need people involvement. This is what it's about. It's not about National Liberty Alliance trying to rule anything. You know, we're trying as a group to bring things back, but the grassroots is where the power's got to be set.
Right,
we got to
empower
grassroots. And grassroots can only be empowered if the people step up to take that power. And it starts right here with what we're doing. This is where it starts, the education, the communication, the organizing.
Well, how does someone get involved with the PR? How does somebody get involved?
Well, you know what? Get a hold of Dan, and he'll connect you with Ron, with the welcoming committee, and Gary,
okay.
And then you can bring ideas to them. You can see what they're doing,
okay.
And then you add to those ideas. Maybe you can spur up a different kind of committee to do different things, you know.
Okay.
And anybody who's got an idea and create a committee that might help to, you know, grow us in knowledge and in numbers. You know, this is what we want to do. But
yeah,
with that, I'm going to have to end the call. I do have another call.
So thank you. It's nice talking with you. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, and God bless.
You too. All right, I got one of the callers. I'm going to take them. We'll spend a couple of more minutes. James, you got the mic from Pennsylvania.
Yes, Jim, Pennsylvania. Sorry to call so late. But something I have to ask, what is NLA's position on common law marriage?
Well, common law marriage is really the only way for marriage to take place. You know, usually it's done in churches or some kind of a community way. You know, I guess there could be a lot of ways. But you see, once you go to the government to get a license to get married, and if you go to a justice of the peace, you're going to have to get a license to get married. Now you just took a partnership into your marriage, didn't you?
Yeah.
So anything that eliminates that.
Well, I think you and Brent had answered my question earlier, but in closing, Brent's weekly call or Ron Paul's weekly column today restated the importance of auditing the Fed and then eliminating them.
Absolutely. Well, look at when they get eliminated, the auditing is going to happen. Which if it's before or after. And Trump has quite a bit of control on that Fed. Remember the one thing, the way they planned to collapse this economy was to raise the interest rates, okay? And he's been hammering them. And you know, they'd love to now collapse the economy because that would be the perfect thing that could really kind of overshadow all the other things that's going to come out. But they're unable to do it because they've lost control of the Fed. You know, there is a struggle still going on, but, you know, Trump's got a pretty good hold on that Fed. And at some point, the audit is going to happen. And for Ron Paul to get out there and start talking about that is just a timely thing to get this into the consciousness of the people. Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you. Good night.
Okay. Thank you, James. Okay, with that, we've come to the end of our program, and Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. But by the way, we're going to be searching for another platform, so numbers may change and access codes may change. We'll send an email out if we do make that change before next Monday. I certainly hope we do, because this is this is horrible to try to control a call on this particular board. And so anyway, if we get it by next week, we will be putting an email out. We will have all the information with the new phone number and the access code up on our website. We'll have a dialer up there just like we have to come in through your browser, but we'll just be looking for a different service to service us. So, okay, with that, good night, everybody, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Godspeed. Bye. Now if I can only figure out how to shut this down one at a time. Let's see, the recording first.